You'll never have to overexert yourself digging too deep for the best prices on Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a Podcast when you start your shopping with our link, robasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who just started an IV on himself with coffee, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very fun edition today of Rob Has a Podcast. And it's very fun, not necessarily because of the subject matter we are discussing, but for the person, the man that is standing here with me in the studio. Great friend of Rob Has a Podcast. We have not talked to him since Survivor Worlds Apart. Please welcome back to the podcast the great winner of Survivor Panama, Aris Bushkaskis.
Woohoo! Great to be here. I don't identify as the winner anymore. Now I consider myself the merge boot.
The merge boot of Survivor Blood versus Water.
Boom. Yeah,
that's the biggest threat, you know. That's what they do. They got to get rid of the biggest threat there. Anyway, very excited to have you here to talk about this episode. And you're fired up today.
I'm excited. My wife gave me instructions on what to talk about. So there's a lot.
Yes. My wife gave me instructions to talk about too, but she identifies with the bullies. So
our wives are on opposing tribes because my wife actually sent me a text just before we started saying, don't forget to talk about those bullies.
Oh, we will talk about bullies. We will talk about medevacs. We will talk about everything else in between here on our big Survivor episode recap. Of course, I spoke with Stephen Fishbach. I don't know what you did last night.
I listened to you speak to Stephen Fishbach.
Yes. So we talked about everything on the know-it-alls this morning. I did my double exit interview, Caleb and Alicia.
So did you have to split time or did you get 20-20?
You know, they used to do it where they would, like, there was a period of time where they would call you with both people are on the line. And it was very hard to do, like, especially if they didn't have anything in common where it was like, okay, well, let's talk to you. And they also do that sometimes with the finale, like, even in Blood versus Water, like, there was a couple of people where it was like, I think I was talking to, like, Hayden Moss and Laura Moret on the same call or something like
right,
that.
Yeah.
So, but now lately they've been scheduling two calls, both at the same amount of time.
Got it. So that's nice. At least
two calls, 15 minutes. Like at one point, even like during Survivor Karamoan, I think it was the Shamar and Laura Alexander, boot episode. They said, okay, we'll call you with 7 minutes with Shamar and then 7 minutes with Laura Alexander.
Well, let me ask you this then, because I haven't gotten to listen to the,
I just posted it.
Okay. So after speaking to Alicia in person,
yeah,
does your view change?
You know what? I was actually more impressed with her on the call than I thought I was going to be. I actually thought that she sounded like a little bit more like I thought that, you know, based on what we've been hearing about her and sort of the perception of her, you know, I thought that she was going to be more cat-like. And I felt like that. I thought she was actually, she was a better speaker and seemed like more with it than I had anticipated she was going
to
be.
I have to listen. It's interesting because sometimes you do the, you know, the day after interviews with the last person voted out and it changes my perspective listening. Like, oh, I really don't like this person or I like him a little bit more.
Yeah. Usually I think that more often than not, you end up like feeling like a, better about the person when you hear them speak about, you know, 14, 15 minutes uninterrupted, as opposed to just like in sound bites here or there. And you get a little bit more of their, take. And it's not always the case. Sometimes you feel like, oh, that person really was a douche, but not the case with, today.
Okay, good. Because that's going to lead, I'm probably not going to start there, but that's going to give us some good information when we start talking about the bullying situation.
Okay. All right. Of course, this is the first of two podcasts. I split up the recap and the voicemail podcast. I'm going to speak with Jessica Lease, my co-host for the Amazing Race podcast. We are going to get together later tonight and take your voicemails. So look for that early Friday. All right. So what have you been, before we get to all the Survivor stuff, what's been going on with, we haven't spoken to you since it was May of last year, right before Vetus ultimately was going to go play in Survivor Cambodia.
Right. Yeah. River, my son he's almost two. Mm-hmm. He's just a half year younger than Dom.
Yeah.
And, I think our whole family's still licking the wounds of Vetus's first boot. No, I'm joking. We're not licking her. We're proud of Vetus.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, you know, the family has taken a nice, well-rounded approach to the game. So we've gotten all aspects now.
Right.
But yeah, just working. My wife and I have a dress company and, you know, spending time with the little man.
Yeah.
Getting my dad bought on.
Talk about the dress company, because I think that maybe some people don't quite know what you guys are up to, and you guys are really doing some impressive stuff right now.
Yeah. So my wife and I have a dress company called Christy Dawn, named after my wife. And
it's a good move.
Yeah, she designs all the dresses. I'm in charge of production, and we're a little husband wife team. We have a shop in Venice, and we sell online. So things are going really well. It's a far cry from my days as a Russian hat salesman, I can tell you that.
Yes.
The only reason I got out of that business was because after the roast, I got roasted pretty hard. I figured I need out.
Because there were too many jokes about the tundra hats.
Sophie got too many in, and I felt like I need out.
No. Do you have a box of them somewhere?
No, I sold the company, and they took everything.
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 Wow. Yeah. I still have my Jets tundra hat.
Which is it's a great hat. I just, it was time. It was time to move on and get into the women's dress game, apparently.
Okay. Well, let's talk about everything that was going on in the episode. I guess let's start with the medical evacuations, because that was really, you know, Survivor, as real as it gets for the players that were out there. What was in your Survivor playing experience, either in Panama or in Blood versus Water, maybe the toughest conditions that you ever faced in a challenge?
Yeah, you know, I think probably the toughest conditions we ever faced in the challenge was a little bit similar. Was my first season. There was a challenge early on. It's the one where Bob Dog ended up picking up Sally Marie and pulling her onto his mat. It was a pillow was hiding under sand. Mm-hmm. You had to dig it up, and then you had to wrestle and get that pillow onto your mat.
Yeah, that's like one of those wrestling things where you have to hold on to, or that wasn't holding on to, that was sort of like go dig up a thing in a circle. Again, then, having to do with digging.
Right.
Basically like run back and tackle people.
Right. And you know, by the time we got to like the third group that went out and did it, nobody ran. Everybody just walked because they knew like this is going to be a battle. This is, you know, this isn't going to be a short
thing. Was it a hot day when you guys did that?
Yeah. I mean, it's always, I don't know. I feel like unless it's raining, it's hot where they're filming Survivor. Mm-hmm. You know, do you feel like that rings true for your experiences?
Yeah. I think sometimes you could get some sort of like where a storm is sort of like either moving in or moving out, and it could be like more overcast.
Right. Now this wasn't overcast, but I do think though that Cambodia is probably the hottest conditions. Mm-hmm. Maybe Guatemala is the only place that would rival the heat of 118 degrees.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the digging is tiring. And for us on our challenge, it was the actual wrestling.
Right.
Where you were just exhausted.
Yeah.
You know, but I three people going down in one challenge, that's unprecedented. And I mean, what an amazing job the medical team did. I don't think, I don't know how that registered for viewers, but for me, I was just like, they have their shit together. Pardon the curse word, but it's for them to be able to triage three people like that was pretty amazing.
No, it was really intense. And that was sort of what I was really impressed with going back and watching it this morning. And just like, you know, Jeff wasn't freaking out. Like he had a pretty, like he said he was scared, I believe, in his interview with Dalton Ross today. But he really did seem like, okay, you over here, you over here. I would have been like, oh my God. What's happening now?
Yeah, no, you can, I watching it, I could see that Jeff, there was fear on his face, but he did handle it really well. I think the whole team handled it really well. And it makes you think like, are the challenges, you know, moving forward, are they going to adjust them? Because that's something I'm guessing they want to avoid what happened in, you know, this episode's reward challenge. They want to avoid those results from happening again.
Well, tell me this. Did you feel like this was preventable in any way? Because I've seen people on Twitter and I've seen other survivors say on Twitter, hey, what were they thinking with this challenge? I don't know necessarily if they realized how hard it was going to be to dig up those bags of balls. I don't think that in their wildest dreams, they could have imagined that it would take over 40, 45 minutes for the teams, each of the teams to dig up those three bags. Cause they found the first one or two very quickly, seemingly.
Yeah. No, I, you know, it's like Monday morning quarterback. I think maybe you say, okay, this is something you should have run at 9 a.m. not, and I don't know what time they did it at. Mm-hmm. But I really don't think it was something that they could have avoided because they test everything. Remember, they have the dream team tested. Granted, you're not anywhere near as dehydrated as a dream team member as you are when you're playing the game.
Right.
But I just think that it's even for me as someone who's played before watching, I was like, God, it really is taking them a long time to get those bags. I don't know how you felt, but I felt like, wow, this doesn't, I don't think they anticipated a 45 minute search for three bags in a relatively small area of sand. And who knows how deep they really were, but I don't think this is something that, well, sure, it could have been avoided, but the expectation that this would happen was probably very low.
Especially that you have four people in that certain, like, say it was like, you know, a 12-foot, you know, diameter
with one
circle.
Person digging, maybe.
Right. Yeah. But you have four people. Yeah. So you would think, okay, like, let's split this up into four quadrants.
Right.
You have basically one area to comb the desert and just go through. You would think that it would not take that long. But I just think that the exhaustion was like so intense on everybody. And the dehydration was probably already so intense by the time they got to that point. I do think that almost every one of the players out there was dogging it to some degree,
right?
And maybe that leads to why there was a couple people that maybe weren't, the people that weren't dogging it, maybe like a Caleb or like a Debbie or like a Sydney, those were the people that really ended up
paid the price. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, it's hard to say who was dogging. I mean, Alicia, you can't say she was dogging it because I think that's just what Alicia does. You know what I mean? I think that's just, she was going as hard as Alicia goes in challenges.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I definitely think, like, you know, certain people are more competitive than other people. You know, mm-hmm. Sydney's, she's going to go as hard as she can.
Yeah.
And maybe foolishly, you know, yeah. She doesn't know how to pace herself as well.
And that was one of the things that Caleb had mentioned to me in the exit interview, was that he was going at, you know, he felt like, he said that Ty looked like he was taking a break and other people were sort of taking a break. And he was saying that, you know, that he did not have that gear in him, which, you know, ultimately might have been, you know, game preserving or self preserving, right, for him to, you know, take that break. Well, what did you think about in terms of, I talked about this on the Know It Alls last night, in terms of that reward ultimately, like, does that factor in for you at all as somebody out there of like, this reward's not that great, I'm not going to go all out for this?
I think, you know, if I'm being really honest, for me, it wouldn't have factored in. Mm-hmm. And not that that's wise on my part. I'm one of those hyper competitive people that wants to win everything. Yeah. But I do think that if you're smart, you say, okay, do I need to win this? And I think anytime you're out there on Survivor, no single challenge is going to win you the game.
Yeah.
So don't let it lose you the game. Right?
Right.
And I think that's a lesson for Caleb. Like, you have to pace yourself. You have to take a step back and ask yourself, is this ultimately going to lead to my goal, or is this going to lead to my demise?
Because I do feel like that Jeff would call that sort of a loser mentality. But I think that if you're looking at a big picture, am I going to win the battle but ultimately lose the war?
Which happened for Caleb. Like, he won that battle, but it quite literally
won the hearts of America.
And he probably,
don't forget that, Aris.
And he probably won a second chance.
Probably.
I think probably that's the first in memoriam for someone that never needed a memoriam.
Yeah, he made it. But I do feel like that I might say, like, what are we doing? I mean, I remember in my first season in the Amazon that we had a challenge, and it was not that we were saying, hey, we don't care if we win or lose. It was like the thing where you have to do like a log rolling and sort of knock the person off. And we sort of got our butts kicked by the other tribe. This was after the swap, when we got beat by the post swap Tambaki tribe. And the reward was like, you know, a bunch of like a little assortment of fruit and spices. It was like a similar, and like, you know, salt and pepper, similar sort of prize package as to what that second place prize would have been. And we lost the challenge. It was like, who cares?
Right. Right. Yeah. You temper your disappointment when it's like not much out there. I mean, that is kind of a great point that you bring up. Like, there really is no risk to losing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
this was a reward challenge.
Yeah. A reward challenge with no Exile Island staring you down. You know? Like, what's the big thing about losing it? But as you well know, like, the, Unfortunately, you got a lot of competitive people out there. And once you're in that competitive mode, you just don't,
mm-hmm.
It's hard to differentiate between, okay, do I go hard now? Is it a switch I can turn on and off, or do I just go?
Is that even a possible move? Like, Steven and I were talking about this last night, where you could make, and, you know, you've been in a leadership role in all the tribes that you've been in. If it was even a possibility to say, hey, let's call off the dogs on this one.
Yeah. I think, ideally, you have a good leader out there that sees, okay, we didn't win the main package. these guys are already leaps and bounds ahead of us in second place, right? So Braun was so far behind. It took Beauty a while to get that last ball in. I think at a certain point, you just got to say, please just beat us. Yeah. Just finish us.
And it's almost like, but the problem was there was no, like the being out there was the torture,
right?
That just being out there baking in the sun. So the idea of just dogging it and just standing there was not going to be any better than, right. You know, you right. weren't exerting energy, but you were still sort of cooking,
still baking
in that sun. And you yeah. see a guy like Jason who already has like those injuries, right. that terrible sunburn on his shoulders, and then, you know, continuing to get it more and more on his back.
And Jason found all three bags. So like, what was Scott doing?
I don't know.
I mean, you hear Jason yell at Alicia, I found the first two. How many have you found?
Mm-hmm.
And then it brings up a couple questions. One, is bounty hunting a direct is there a direct correlation with bounty hunting and finding buried bags? That's my first
good
question.
Good at finding things. He's yeah, resilient.
He's very good at that. And what was Scott doing?
Yeah.
Like, why didn't Scott find any? That's a big man. He should be able to shovel a lot of sand, a lot of cubic sand out of the area.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what he was doing. Let's talk through the medevacs first and then get more into Alicia. You in Survivor Panama had the medical evacuation of Bruce.
Which I actually wasn't there for. There. I was away on a reward when it happened.
You were away on the reward, what was it, overnight, and you were with Ceree and Danielle?
Correct, yeah. And it was Shane, Courtney, Bruce, and then Terry was on Exile Island by himself.
Okay, yeah. So Jess, it was just Shane and Courtney holding down the fort
right.
When Bruce ultimately had to leave the game. What kind of impact does that have? Because I would think it's probably different post-merge where right. you're not happy that something has happened to Bruce in any way. But I think it's a little different when you're part of a 6-person tribe and this is somebody who's maybe your strongest person on your tribe
right.
and you're losing somebody who's an ally as opposed to somebody who is now you are at final 7. You're going to just lose somebody who is you're getting everybody's taking one step closer to that million.
So Beauty hasn't gone to tribal council yet.
Right.
Right. So I think any new player until they go to tribal council, there's not that like, okay, this is an individual game. So none of the people on Beauty have that yet. So they lose Caleb, like they lose their leader. They lose their charismatic talisman.
Mm-hmm.
That's really hard.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a strange way to experience your first loss of a tribe mate.
Yeah.
I think is there any other season? Maybe Survivor One World where you have people experiencing their first tribe mate who's out via a medevac.
Well, you have Courtney who goes out that way in Survivor One World. She doesn't end up going to a tribal council. You also have in Survivor Philippines the next season where Dana is somebody who goes out and who has not gone to
the
tribal council. Also in Survivor Blood versus Water, the great Colton.
That's right.
Left the game without going to a tribal council.
That's true, but all of us had been. You know, we were returning players,
You were returning players.
Because there is something to be said about going to your first tribal.
Yeah.
There is a proverbial hymen to be broken.
It is. For Caleb, though, if he does come back as a returning player, I think that he is going to have some sort of weird precedent, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I would believe that he would be the first player to ever go to their first tribal council, potentially in their second season.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
I can't imagine there's any other person. You have people who might have been brought back who got voted out at their first tribal council. Francesca comes to mind. RC was in the mix to come back in your Blood versus Water season.
She was
season.
Right there. She was at the door.
There's a couple people that have been to a couple, but I don't think there's anybody that they've ever brought back who has never even made it to a tribal council.
So essentially never even played the game.
He has played parts of the game, but the main part of the
right,
game,
the most important part of the game, he's yet to play.
He has not played yet.
And I think you can agree. I want to see him play.
I think that the story has not yet been written.
Unfortunately for Caleb,
mm-hmm.
playing a second time with 2-time players is not nearly as easy as playing a first time.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the thing for him where now he has played Big Brother.
Right. So he understands that social game.
He does have that sort of background where the same way that Hayden had, I thought, such a big advantage against the fellow one-time players in your season. Again, probably that's a level playing field against the returning Survivor players.
Right.
But he had played through a whole season of Big Brother. And I think that actually Caleb might have spent more time on Big Brother than even Hayden had. I think they didn't start making these seasons really super size.
But didn't so Caleb won his season?
No.
But Hayden did win.
Hayden did win. I think that they've made this the Big Brother season longer. Stretched it out another 2 weeks.
It was 72 days, right?
Yeah, I think that the Big Brother 16 was probably somewhere around like 90 days.
Jesus, these poor people.
they really stretched it out.
These poor cameramen. That's who I feel the worst for.
Yeah, on Big Brother.
Yeah.
They're fine. So here's
the thing though. I've never contemplated this until I was here. Somebody like Caleb, so mm-hmm. a strong, young alpha male like Caleb, has a much better chance to win his first time playing with newcomers on Survivor than he would a second season.
That's pretty fair. I do think that Caleb is going to be somebody, if we are starting to like plot out how a second time out would look for Caleb, I think that everybody would look at him. And again, so much of it is what's the perception of you coming into your second season? And then people are going to say, oh, Caleb, he's a good guy. He's heroic. He's trustworthy. He's loyal. Like, I think he has all of the big things going for him where I would be very surprised if he is a pre-merge boot.
Yeah,
in the second season.
I don't see him a pre-merge boot. Maybe at the end, but
possibly.
But I mean, you figure Caleb coming into this season, there's, if you were going to put it in percentage wise, 0% he's pre-merge this season.
Yeah, maybe the numbers completely were against him in some sort of post-swap scenario, but it would be super unlikely.
Right.
The question and the book on him is ultimately going to be, in that second season, how does he prevent himself, as Steven said last night, from being the typical merge boot in a season? What does he have that gear? Like, I just feel like the ceiling on him in some sort of returning season is like that, you know, fifth or sixth place of like, okay, even if like he stays loyal and true to everybody, how do they, like, nobody would let him sit in the final three.
Now, is this something you based on his gameplay on Big Brother? Because I never saw that, so I don't know how his gameplay was. Because I think, like, for me, I see like Caleb could easily be a young Jeremy Collins. Did Big Brother tell you otherwise?
I think that that's a slight to Jeremy. I think that Jeremy is both men seem to have a good social game. I think that there is probably a strategic awareness that Jeremy has that I would say that we probably have not seen from Caleb in either Big Brother or in Survivor. I think that he's somebody who is a good guy, but I don't think that he is necessarily a major strategic mover and shaker.
Right.
And I think that Jeremy was very keenly aware of
right.
the strategy during that season. I think that Jeremy, that there was a comfort level with him in Survivor Cambodia where people came to him and he made them feel comfortable. And I think that I'm not sure, especially in the Big Brother game, I'm not sure if necessarily people walked away from their conversations with Caleb and that he put them at ease.
Right. Right. But we didn't really get to see any of that though.
We didn't.
We saw a little bit with the girls who were like, we like Caleb. And I think what was kind of telling about Caleb's position is that when Jeff told, was it Anna? He told Anna like, hey, he's gone for good. And she broke down. You could see that he had really kind of, embedded himself in the hearts of his tribe. So while they hadn't had to make any strategic moves yet, I think that had he wanted to make a move, all the groundwork was laid. I think the thesis of my thought on Caleb is he's going to have a much tougher time on his second go around than he would have had he gotten to play this one out. So he should have dogged it in the challenge is the end of.
Yeah, but the thing about him is that at the point where a beast mode cowboy dogs it in challenges, he ceases to be the person that is interesting as the beast mode cowboy.
Correct.
Like at the point where beast mode cowboy is doing something I would do, he's now some sort of like does not compute. Like, he's beast mode cowboy. He has to go all out. He has to be the martyr. Yeah. He has to, win it for his tribe as opposed to, I mean, that's just his lane, you know?
Right, right, right. And I know this isn't necessarily applicable to this season, but should Caleb play again, how much do you think the other contestants are going to want him out just based on the fact that he's going to get a lot of camera time. How much does that play into a
second
season?
Well, you would know better than me, because at the time I played my second game, I don't know how much that was really a factor. I do think that there were people like Boston Rob who might have been thinking that way in terms of getting rid of somebody like me. But in terms of like the modern day returning players, how much are they thinking about that and going at? Because, you know, you had a guy like Cochran who came back and who was a big camera time hog in his first season. That did not seem to be a factor for people like, oh boy, Cochran's gonna, you know, really eat up all the camera time if we leave him around here in Survivor Caramel.
That's true. That's true, because it's about everyone's their own hero. Right? Mm-hmm. So
I really don't think that would be a factor with the returning players. Like,
well, I mean, Steven might argue differently. Like, hey, people were going after me because they knew I was
I don't think that people went after Steven at all because of that he was a camera time hog. I think they said maybe, okay, Steven is a strategic threat and he's either talked about all of us and I want to, you know, show him he doesn't know anything, or you could argue a lot of things, but I don't think that people necessarily feared Steven as a camera time hog. I mean, also just taking a look at the people that got voted out early in last season. I don't think that anybody was saying, okay, Vetus is eating, you know, he's going to eat up all the camera time. Shireen's going to go after the camera
right.
time.
I tend to agree with that. I do think that there is a level though of, when you're assigning size targets that the level of camera time that you think someone's going to get is going to kind of play into the how big you think that person's target should or shouldn't be.
I think that maybe the thing you could cite, and you could probably speak to this in terms of with Colton, I feel like that if you feel like people are artificially creating drama out there, then I think that's something that you would target somebody for.
Right. Right.
And so that's not something that I think that Caleb would do. So I actually think he's positioned pretty well for a return trip to Survivor. And you never know what could happen. Where does he end up, like, coming back and ending up on a tribe with another alpha male that he was in a good landing spot here in this tribe, where there was only one other alpha male type guy, Nick, who is not, you know, trying to fight, you know, Caleb for leadership. Also, Anna was kind of in the leadership role, but, you know, she really, I think she was, you know, there was room for Caleb to be that sort of like strong alpha male figure at that, in that tribe, in a tribe of 10, as we might typically see in a returning player season. Now, if he's in a tribe with, say, I'm not sure, like, give me, you know,
put him on it. I think if Caleb comes back, they might invite Hayden back too.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because he hasn't played a second time.
Yeah, but Hayden can get along with anybody.
But what if you put those two on the same tribe? What happens?
I think it would be fine. I think that the question for me is more, if you put him on a tribe with, say, and I don't think that this person is coming back, but say like an Andrew Savage or an Andrew right. Savage type, or a Brad Culpepper, somebody who's sort of
or
like
Terry Dietz,
or so, an older alpha male type right. guy. Is there sort of a butting of heads
right.
there, or is Caleb able to get along with everybody?
That actually, I think Terry Dietz is going to play again, and I think he's going to play with Caleb. I think that'll be a theme.
I mean, I don't sense that it would be, you know, a real negative combination, but
no, I think Terry and Caleb get along. I feel like the only time that Caleb would probably kind of have a problem is when you have someone like maybe a Philip Shepherd,
mm-hmm.
who's completely kind of sociopathic in his need for control.
Yeah, that might be interesting. And so we'll see. We'll see how it ultimately will play out. I think it won't be too long before we get to, you know, ultimately see how that's all going
to
go.
Well, congratulations to Caleb for getting to play a second time. I think we can all agree that's happening.
I wouldn't bet against it.
I wouldn't either.
You never know. Sometimes there are these people that come out of a season. It's like, well, that person's definitely playing, but it almost seemed as though the show, there right. was some signaling
There's
going on there.
Yeah.
With
and I think he deserves to play again.
And I asked Caleb in the exit interview this morning, if you got Lynn Spillman's on one phone, Robin Cass is on the other phone, both are doing an All-Stars at the same time, which show could you do if you could only do one? And I was surprised. He said Survivor.
Well, yeah, I would guess so, right? Because he hasn't really gotten to climb that mountain yet.
Yeah. So I think that's just an interesting thing, because I mean that I would say that Caleb is, you know, much more well known, I would think, for his Big Brother career. I mean, he's only in four episodes of not that there's anything wrong with going out in the fourth episode of Survivor. It's a highly dignified spot to go out in any given season. But that being said, I was surprised that he would pick to go on a Survivor season instead of a Big Brother season.
Outside of going home first, what's the least dignified way to go out? A spot to go out on Survivor second?
I would say if you were probably going just like mathematically, I think whenever you quit, I think that's the least dignified spot to go out. But we will see what goes on ultimately with Caleb. All right. Let's start to talk a little bit more about this Alicia story, because this has been such a bigger story in terms of the, like, everybody was really blown away by the Caleb thing. But I feel like there's been more conversation online coming out of this episode about Alicia and her treatment and the Jason and Scott thing. And thinking back to Survivor Panama, of course, we remember how the many, many fights between Shane and Courtney in Survivor Panama.
So, or myself and Bruce.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
It happens.
Wait, hold on. Who was the Alicia in the you and Bruce scenario?
I would say that, you know, in context of the RS and Bruce thing, I think Bruce would have been the Alicia and I would have been the bully. But, you know, so here's how I would begin to discuss the Alicia situation, is that it's very complex and that you have to understand a lot of factors going in. The first thing that you have to understand is that it's 24 hours a day out there, mm-hmm. right? So it's not just what you're seeing, and that chances are very good that Alicia was a very annoying person to be out there with, right? And that doesn't justify the acts of Jason and Scott at all, but she was most likely a very difficult person to get along with. And that's why she's out there. That's why Lynn Spillman gets paid the big bucks, because she finds these conflicts, right? These people, she knows, are going to be conflicted. You have to take into account that everyone's dehydrated, right? People are exhausted. They're not sleeping. They're dehydrated. And then you have to take into account that Jason and Scott were diametrically opposed to the existence of Alicia. And the opposite is true as well. They had publicly acknowledged they didn't like each other. And so, for what it's worth, at a subconscious level, you essentially are looking at this other person as a danger to your survival, mm-hmm. right? And so instinctually, as a human being, as an animal, if something's endangering your survival, you're going to do one of three things. You're going to try to kill them, attack them, you know, or you're going to run from them, or you're going to stand still. And obviously Scott and Jason, at a subconscious level, were trying to kill Alicia, not physically, but at least emotionally.
Right.
So I think all those things are going on. That being said,
well, can I add to that?
Yeah.
Because I think that you do bring up a good point, because I do think that on Survivor, and especially we see this a lot on Big Brother, there's a person who is sort of the pariah. This is the person who's the next to go. You see it quite a bit in the Big Brother house, that the person who everybody knows is going to go home on that Thursday, nobody talks to them anymore.
Right. You have to sever all emotional bonds.
They become the butt of all the jokes. They become sort of like a real persona non grata.
Absolutely.
And I do think that to some degree, it was very clear Alicia is on the bottom. Alicia is now, to some level, you know, subhuman, that we could say anything about her. She's the next to go.
And to interrupt you for a second, this isn't a conscious choice by the contestants in Big Brother mm-hmm. or Survivor. This is a very subconscious drive to somehow justify in your own mind what you're about to do, which for the listeners, I know this sounds crazy, but at least on Survivor, when you vote someone off, it feels like you are killing them.
Yes, I agree completely. And it's just a way to almost justify what you are doing to this person, that we are voting them out because obviously they're this terrible person.
You villainize them.
You have to villainize
and
them.
And it's not conscious. That's the thing. For most people, it's not a conscious choice. I can say that even when I got voted out, I had a great relationship with everyone on my cast. The day I got voted out, Jervis was being a little bit mean to me. We made this checkerboard. And I kept winning, and Jervis kept making these like real snide comments. This is a friend of mine, you know, like, and in hindsight, it was like, yeah, he had to. That was the only way he could do it. So that, I think, is playing into what you're seeing, right? So that's part of, I think, what's happening with Jason, with Scott, is that they are, in a very real term, trying to justify this vote out.
Right.
At an emotional level, not a conscious level.
And let me also just clarify here. Nobody here is saying that this is an excuse.
Zero.
No.
Understand how it happens.
Could not be more clear last night. And, yeah. Again, some people like were having difficulty understanding what I'm saying.
Right.
Disavow.
And I disavow their behavior. I don't disavow them as humans because my thesis is here is that these are extenuating circumstances.
Right.
Their behavior was deplorable. But understand how that came to be, and that I would bet that Scott and Jason, if put in the same situation in a room with Alicia for that many days, but getting to go home, take a shower, and eat, would behave totally differently.
Yes, yeah, and I think that it is for me. I'm more comfortable talking about this is why this is happening, as opposed to sort of writing off these are bad guys.
Right. Yeah.
These are bad people. And I know that that is sort of like the easier way to discuss this of that this happened because these two guys are bad people. And I think that there's always more to this story, and I am not making an excuse. I'm just talking. We're having an adult conversation.
Exactly. These are people who made bad decisions, whether they're good or bad. I couldn't say that, but they're people who made bad decisions. Now, that being said, terrible strategically, right? If you're looking at it just from a gameplay, now you do have an enemy. So if there's a merge, if you didn't lose that challenge, if there's a merge before the challenge, if you had to drop your buffs on, you know, at the challenge.
Yes. Now, interestingly, I wanted to make sure we had this correct. So I asked Alicia this morning, did you feel like Jason and Scott threw this challenge? Because I went back and I watched the challenge again this morning, and I did feel like I did not see Jason and Scott dogging it. If they were trying to throw the challenge, they did the leg where they had to swim out to the water. They could have just taken their sweet time, not come back with any of the puzzle pieces.
Right.
And their way ultimately of throwing the challenge, at least according to Alicia, was that she wanted to switch out. She didn't want to do the puzzle. And that she said that they threw the challenge by they made her do the puzzle, which I felt like was a little bit like, you know,
if I'm throwing a challenge, I want to be the one on the puzzle because I can guarantee that puzzle's not going
to
solve.
And if I was ever somebody who was on if a tribe was trying to throw a challenge to get rid of me, I would love to be the person to have my own fate in my hands.
Absolutely.
Put me on the puzzle at the end. So for Alicia, she kind of said, like, obviously they were trying to throw the challenge. They wouldn't switch out with me when I said I didn't want to do the puzzle.
Right. Right. And I do want to go back a little bit more to the bullying thing just so I'm clear, because I feel like I haven't yet.
Oh, we're still there.
So I do feel, though, like at the end of the day, you know, Jason and Scott made a terrible choice. And given there's conditions that we talked about that, but like at the end of the day, it just wasn't right. It wasn't right. And I think another one of the factors that led to them making such a bad decision is there were two of them kind of on the same page, and they were kind of egging each other on. And there was no like stopgap measures, i.e. somebody else who was like, you know, you have Sydney who's like just struggling to hold on. Mm-hmm. She's not really going to step in and stop them. There was nobody else there that was kind of a voice of reason that was like, guys, you know, take a break. There was nobody really stopping that from happening.
There was no adult in the room to say, all right, come on. This has gone far enough. You had sort of like Scott and Jason who are bonding over this. They're getting, they're getting like their friendship and their alliance is being strengthened by that. They both have this mutual dislike of this one person. And unfortunately, Sydney is not in a position to, as you know, she is probably the third wheel there. She also cannot say to these guys like, hey, I think we need, like, if she takes a stand, she could be the next person voted out.
Right. Exactly. And she has to choose, like, in the context of this game, do I want to support Alicia or do I want to just kind of go with the flow, which unfortunately was, you know, a not a great flow.
Yeah. So in the challenge last night, we really started to see this come to a head. And from my conversation with Alicia, you know, she basically, I thought, had said that for the most part, most of the things that they had said to her, like the worst of the things, were in confessional. She didn't know those things. She knew that there was tension and that those guys like were dismissive of her. But she didn't know like a lot of the things that they were saying about her.
Right.
Right. She did talk about how that Jason did knock her over when she was trying to go for the hidden immunity idol and knocked her into a bunch of rocks, which I felt like was not as it was portrayed on the show. I did not think that was as big of a deal based on what I had seen from the show. According to her, it was a big deal that she said she was hurt by what had happened.
Physically hurt. Oh, is that how she got the thing on her nose?
I'm not sure. She said that she had a couple of scars and she said she will show them at the reunion show.
Wow. I hope she lets go of it before the reunion show. I hope that's not like for her sake, for her own emotional sake. I hope she just like,
well, it really is going to come down to that. The book on Jason really isn't written. Like as Steven predicted, he thought Jason's going to go far into the game. If Jason goes to the final three, I think this is going to be a story that we're going to probably, there will be more Jason stories to talk about as opposed to if Jason gets voted out on the next episode, I could see this being more of a thing like, all right, Jason and Alicia, you guys had a lot of the attention when you were out there.
Right, exactly. My fear for Alicia is that it's like, it's not that big of a story by the end of the season. It's the biggest story there is right now, but by the end of the season, maybe it's not going to get the thing. And the other thing is like, we'll get to see Jason and Scott play without Alicia and without really any kind of consequences to their treatment of Alicia. So people are going to treat, you know, and now that we've dropped our bus, we're going to see how these guys are outside of that relationship. And that'll kind of shed a little bit more light on this situation.
Yeah. Steven and I talked about that last night that I do think that those guys have a second chance to make a first impression in the game. And there's a lot of people who will never be able to forgive them for what they did to Alicia and what they were saying to Alicia over these first four episodes, but they do have a little bit of a clean slate in terms of how the game goes. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not they are able to bounce back from this, or if we see more of the same. And also, especially like if they go into these two tribes next week, if Jason is on one tribe and Scott's on the other, will we see both those guys be in a kinder place mentally because they're not going to have their bash brother to be sort of egging them on.
Right. Exactly. And let's say some positive things about Alicia, because my guess is that she's probably listening. Cause I would be, if this is my boot episode.
Yeah. I don't get that vibe from Alicia, but we'll go.
But even if she wasn't listening,
nonetheless,
I love that she didn't quit. I love that she didn't go to tribal. As I can see,
she's got spunk.
I love that she got the fire started, you know, that she stayed with it. Listen, kicking sand is probably not the best way to find a bag, but she didn't give up. And that's great. As a viewer, I found myself cheering her on. As a viewer, I found myself when she didn't agree to do a tribal immediately, just hoping and praying that there was a second idol out there on that beach, which, side note, are there two idols on each beach?
So. She told me in the exit interview she went out to look for another idol when she got back to camp. But Jeff said to her last night, you know, I can't imagine any of the scenario where you're going to get voted out, but I can't help but root for you.
Right.
And I think that you know, there's a lot of people that feel that way about her. And
the reason I thought there might be two is because the way the idol works this season.
Yeah, that's a good point. I believe that's too many idols. I think that's potentially six pre-merge idols in the game, and let alone anything that's going to happen after the merge. So I think that what you're going to see is that each of the tribes has their own idol. And then if those come together at the merge, we can see that.
That's what they're hoping to see get played. That makes sense. Yeah.
And maybe there's two hidden at the merge. I think you probably need to have, you know, enough idols in there that they could potentially come together.
Are all three idols found yet?
No, there's the Brains tribe idol has not been found.
Right.
Okay. So Ty has an idol and Jason has an idol. Okay. And so for Alicia, I mean, do you think, is there any question that Jason and Scott, did they make the wrong decision going back to, because I couldn't help but think that the way that this all unfolded with Alicia, I mean, those guys never paid the ultimate price in the game of losing the game yet because of this, but had they kept Darnell at that first vote, voted out Alicia, I mean, did they really outsmart themselves? Because, I mean, she was such a thorn in their side. She made them look so bad on the TV show. Isn't that, can we say safely that they made the wrong decision? Because had they kept Darnell, you would imagine that they probably would have won at least one of these next two challenges that they ended up losing.
Yeah. I mean, I think at the very least you can say the choice they made led to continued losses.
Mm-hmm.
So bad choice, right? I mean, we don't know if Darnell would have not made that happen, but we know that at least it did make that happen. So I think it, just for the sake of saying, well, this is the worst possible outcome, Yeah, you got to keep Darnell and you take Alicia out. And just from looking at it from the side, like Jeff said, the only reason, Alicia, you're on this tribe is not because of your physical brawn. It's because of your internal brawn. All right, let's get rid of her. You know, I mean, like you, if you're the brawn tribe, you should be winning challenges. That's the one thing you should be winning.
I mean, assuming that we're not saying that there was some master plan to do some sort of intentional Matt saying, and that Jason and Scott weren't saying that we're going to be in a good spot going into a swap by decreasing our numbers. Don't you think that overall, like that they overthought this idea of the Darnell versus Alicia decision and even the Jennifer versus Alicia decision?
Yeah. I mean, I think definitely the Darnell situation, hindsight 2020, you get rid of Alicia, right? Mm-hmm. So you keep a little bit of your brawn. The Jennifer situation is, that's a little more dicey because she's shown herself to not be trustworthy. The question is if you've been called out on it, is that going to whip you into shape?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And especially considering that Jennifer and Scott had a very close relationship,
right?
At the time we sort of looked at it going back to what Jason said in his pregame of, I'm going to play the game like Russell Hantz. Russell Hantz is the only person that ever played this game correctly. And you're smiling about that. But so we had to assume
Russell Hantz, let's just to be clear, from Russell Hantz is the only person to have not won and played in three. No, I guess there's Amanda too. So I can't say he's the only person. Russell and Amanda are the only people who have gotten to the finals twice and not won.
Yeah.
That's the only true statement you could make.
You can make some other ones. But
you definitely couldn't say he's the only one to play the game correctly, unless coming in second is your end goal.
But just in our thinking of those first couple of votes with the Darnell thing and the Jennifer thing, we said, well, obviously Jason feels like, let me keep Alicia around. I can control her vote. She's somebody. Why would I get rid of one of the pawns in this tribe when it's almost like now Jason has two votes by keeping Alicia instead of Darnell and keeping Alicia instead of Jennifer, because he was going to be able to control her vote. And I think we have to seriously question as to whether or not Jason ever was able to control Alicia's vote. She wasn't like a Natalie White to Russell as
right. She was never a pawn.
She was never a pawn. She was never going to be somebody that they were going to be able to tell her what to be doing, and she was going to follow their lead.
Right. I think that was a little bit of narcissism on the part of Jason, thinking that he was going to be able to control her like that, or just misreading her character.
Or just saying like, she's not a threat.
Right. Right. I mean, funny enough, though, I think that given the way it all played out for Jason and Scott, Jason particularly, because I think, you know, based just on how things are going, I think Jason goes deeper than Scott does. This is kind of an ideal situation, though. There's no evidence of your
it's the perfect crime.
It is the perfect crime
in the game.
In the game, right? There's, you know, you're strong, so you're coming. No matter where you go, no matter what tribe you end up on, as you drop your buffs and pick up new ones, you're going to be an asset to your tribe pre merge. So is Scott. So chances are you're going to get to that merge with Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Sydney's strong, so you're going to probably have a built in three initially, and if you can get a couple other people, you're in a really good situation.
Yeah. And to the victor, they get to write the history book on this. And
exactly.
So that when those guys inevitably go into a swap situation, they will get to tell their story of like, oh my God, Alicia, like she would do this.
And you don't
you're
really
so lucky.
And you don't see any, and not that it didn't happen, but you don't see Sydney in any of the side interviews kind of berating Jason or Scott's treatment of Alicia. So the chances of Sydney saying anything is pretty slim.
Yeah.
Right. And so if Sydney doesn't say anything, there's absolutely, you know, no collateral damage
from
that.
The one comment that she had made when they got back to camp about all this was, you know, you saw Alicia continuing to argue with Jason and Scott, Jason and Scott continuing to argue with Alicia. And the one thing that Sydney said about all that was, she just said that these guys are trying to, you know, mess up my recuperation.
Right. That's all. And that's all she says, which I think, to be fair, I mean, she did need to recover. She was.
Yes. So for Alicia, hypothetically, if she could have ended up on the beauty tribe, say you switched Alicia and Michelle this season, what do you think the book would have been on Alicia?
I think it would probably have been a similar book. I mean, I think that Alicia was still going to be Alicia.
Mm-hmm.
She was cast for one reason in particular. She's grating.
Yeah.
Not that she doesn't have good qualities, because I found, like most people, I found myself cheering for her. But I think, objectively speaking, I think she was bound to get on people's nerves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the beauty tribe had the type of personalities that were going to bully her, though.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't see Caleb. I certainly not Ty. Nick, maybe. I think Anna, I'm not sure how we pronounce that yet.
I say Anna.
Anna. Okay. I'm not sure. Anna maybe would have been one of them, you know, the one of the people who was more likely to bully Lisa than anything. But I just think that she's just grating. I don't think we get to see the bullying.
Well, one of the interesting things that Jeff had said last night in that tribal council was, Alicia, the reason why you're on the Braun tribe, not because you're physically brawny, is because you don't take lip from anybody. So you're outspoken and you defend yourself. But don't you think that overall, if you were going to rank the worst traits in a survivor player, not in a person,
right,
but if you were going to say, what are the things that would make you have the hardest time on Survivor? Isn't an inability to be able to not speak when you have something on your mind, isn't that pretty high up on the list and something that universally we see in pre-merge boots?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the one of the best qualities is the ability to eat crow.
Yes.
The inability to eat crow is going to hurt you. And that's Alicia for
it's
you.
It's almost as if you would say that one of the best things in a Survivor player would be the ability to take lip from anybody.
Exactly. Exactly. Because you figure, had she shut up,
thank you, sir, may I have another.
Exactly.
Is the attitude right. of the successful Survivor right. player.
Exactly. We're talking about Survivor here. We're not talking about in society, but in Survivor, you really do oftentimes have to shut your mouth and just say, okay, I'll remember that later. But right now I'm going to act like it didn't happen, because you can imagine a possibility where at the very least, if Alicia had built a stronger relationship with Sydney, she could say, listen, Sydney, mm-hmm. let's vote together. It's going to go to rocks. It's going to go to fire. So it's not going to go to rocks. Sorry. There's no risk of it going to rocks.
Yeah.
So there's no risk of you voting with me. We're friends. Let me at least have a chance at making fire. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it just goes to show that she really didn't even have a single friend out there.
She did not have a friend out there. I mean, I do think that she probably lobbied Sydney on that, but I think that Sydney is probably a much better example of
eating crow.
I'm going to let these idiots say whatever they're saying. And then I'm just going to, you know, grin and bear it and go ahead and play my game.
And Suri was the best at that.
Yes.
Suri,
speak to that, because again, you've played in a season right. with Shane. There's a lot of craziness going on in that tribe. So what was Suri so good at?
Okay. So this is just a little reminder of how it happened. There's six of us in the tribe,
mm-hmm.
and I say, okay, guys, Shane doesn't want to quit anymore. My vote is either for Suri or Melinda.
Right.
A very regrettable thing to say.
Right.
Undoubtedly, right? I guess there's eight of us, not six, eight of us. And Shane goes, listen, I don't care who we vote out today. The other one's going tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was Melinda today, it's Suri tomorrow, right? So Suri knows, like, I'm at the bottom of this thing. Now, as this all, now, I also have to, poor decision on my part to say what I said.
Right.
Like, just completely insensitive on Shane's
right.
part.
And so what did Suri do?
So what
do?
Suri
did
does.
She told you and Shane off, right?
No, Suri doesn't say anything.
Wait,
Suri doesn't say anything. She didn't say anything. She's helpful around camp. She's enjoyable. And as Shane and Courtney and Danielle and Bob all start to get into these terrible fights. I mean, they were terrible fights in the evening. Suri and I would just sit next to each other and we established this friendship, and she just let other people fight it out. And consistently made herself available when it was just, hey, I need a pep talk, or hey, I need some of this, that she made herself quite literally indispensable.
Yes.
And that got her, as someone who's a clear early boot, to the merge. And when she's at the merge, Suri does what Suri does and she's off and running.
Yeah. One of the greatest Survivor players
of all time. Social players of all time.
Yeah. And that really is what the social game comes down to, of not saying what's on your mind
exactly
at times, and being a better listener than you are a talker.
And Debbie seems to actually be the exception to that rule. She seems to be a better talker than a listener, but she's still a great listener.
Yeah. And I think that Debbie, for the most part, I think that while she is sort of like talking about like weird facts and stuff like that about her, I think that most of her critical things have been in confessional, as opposed to, I don't think we've seen her really telling anybody off.
Except at the start, the first episode where she was like, you know, describing how great yeah. she was. But Debbie is my favorite.
All right. Well, let me just, before we go into yeah. talking about yeah. Debbie, let's just sort of put a pin in what we're saying yeah. about Alicia and Scott and Jason and to the opposite degree, Sydney. Overall, telling people what you really think about them on Survivor is a bad idea for all of the players involved.
Terrible idea.
For Jason and Scott, they were lucky that they were able to form the majority in this group, so their behavior ended up going unchecked.
And just the way it's all going to play out, it's a victim. It's not a victimless crime, because they're certainly a victim. It's the perfect crime, right? They're not going to get caught for it.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, terrible, terrible gameplay for Jason and Scott. Terrible gameplay for Alicia.
And here's both my thought on this as well, in terms of the Jason and Scott behavior, is that I do believe that almost universally the game polices itself. These men will not win the game. And while it is a, you're shaking your head. No,
I think Jason has a shot. Based on the circumstances of how this all played out.
He might be able to get away with this. But if he continues attitude towards other people, whether it's women or men in the game, he will not win. And I have faith that the game does police itself.
I agree with that. I do agree with that. I think that unless there's an extenuated circumstance, perfect timing. In this case, I think for Jason, it's perfect timing.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that, and I don't know Jason, so this is just a prediction, but I think that if you exhibit that behavior once, it's not like the circumstances are changing so drastically. Granted, Alicia's not there anymore, but you're still hungry. You're still tired. I have a strange suspicion that it's going to be demonstrated again, especially as you get to the end game where nerves get even shorter. Mm-hmm. You know, you're even skinnier. You're even more tired. You're hungrier. You're thirstier. I have a feeling we're going to see more of this behavior. Maybe not to this degree, but I have a feeling that it's going to reveal itself again.
Yeah. So for Alicia, also, again, this is an adult conversation that we're having.
Correct.
You know, she did not invite any of this onto her. She should not have had to go through any of this abuse that she took.
No one deserves to be treated like Alicia got treated, period.
Right. She also was somebody who was not a great survivor player strategically.
That's correct. Correct. We're just looking at strategy. And on the other side of it, we're looking at circumstances that would lead somebody to make a really bad decision like Jason and Scott.
She had some qualities that were good that you would want in a survivor. She seemed to be tenacious. She seemed to have a positive attitude. But just going back to that trait that Jeff identified of that you are here because you don't take lip from anybody. That is something that is not part and parcel.
Right. That's not a characteristic that wins Survivor, period.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. Can you name one person who won Survivor who has that trait?
I would say, boy, you know, Tony is a sort of the outlier on a lot of things that, but I do think that Tony could really at times, I think that he could put on a facade. But for the most part, almost universally, that is not something that you associate with the great, you know, when we think about like the Kim Spradlins of the world, like that is somebody who, you know, always like coming off very courteous in how they're, you know, you would never describe them as somebody.
Tyson maybe is actually somebody who maybe speaks more off the cuff, but once you really get to know Tyson, you realize he only does it when he's joking around, and that when he's really upset, he is measured.
He's a ball breaker. Yeah. I think that's different.
Yeah, it's different.
I think that's different. Okay. So let's talk about some of these other tribes and where we end up going from here as we start to head into a swap coming up next week.
And this has been a great season so far.
Very strong season.
I really like the season. I'm excited about Debbie.
An undersold season.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. And also, this is the other thing before we really move on. They filmed this thing a year and a half ago, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the longest.
About a year ago from now.
So this is the longest wait any Survivor season has had to wait to watch their episode air and the story get told.
Mm-hmm.
So just as a sidebar, can you imagine how long Alicia's been waiting to talk about this? Or how much Scott and Jason have been like, oh, geez, how are they going to edit this story? You know, like this is all to consider. And even in the retelling of the story, a year passes. You're not going to remember all the details, right? So even in these post game interviews and their social media banter, everything gets skewed as time passes.
I sense from all those people, like I don't get the sense Alicia was like dying to talk about this. Like I don't think that she really, you know, thinks about Survivor so much in those terms, like the way that maybe I'd be bursting to talk about it. And then I don't think that Jason and Scott seemed to be concerned about how they were coming off.
Right. And
like, I almost feel like that they almost are saying like, still feel justified in how they had acted. I haven't seen, you know, you, if you follow them on social media, you have not seen a really like a boy, we really screwed the pooch on that one.
And which is kind of amazing.
Mea culpa on that. My bad.
Which is kind of amazing because, I mean, I think there's some like objective things you can see, like particularly when they're having the conversation about being teammates.
Yeah.
If Scott has no, there's no place for him to stand there.
Yeah.
Period. Okay. Like there's just none. There's just like, look, you're right. You weren't a good teammate in that moment. Just take it. I don't care if you won 12 championships. Doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, you were a bad teammate. Alicia's right. Move on.
Okay. All right. So talk to me more about Debbie and why you, much like Nicole, are a big Debbie fan. Do we have a name for the Debbie fans?
I don't know. I
think we need to crown that.
Yeah, Debbie, let's figure one out. You're a better namer than I am.
The Debbie, I don't know.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later.
We'll figure it out.
Okay.
Tell us in the comments.
So, somebody hashtag something in the comments and let us know. But I feel like Debbie is everything you want in a Survivor winner.
In a winner. Okay.
Okay. I think Debbie if I was going to say it's between Debbie and Jason, that's my two picks. And if I was going to pick someone from Beauty, I'd say Ty, even though I wouldn't say Ty. I'd say, if I really think they have a chance, I'd say Anna.
Anna was my winner pick.
But Ty, I want to see in there.
Yeah.
He's so lovable. But so if my three actual winner picks right now are Jason, Anna, and Debbie. And here's why Debbie. She really is a good listener. She's really smart. She's underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And when she gets to the merge, who wants Debbie out? Mm-hmm. Like, what's the motivation for voting out Debbie?
Yeah.
Little to none. And I just think that Debbie could make it happen. I think her weakness is her social game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think she's got a great social game. So in order for her to win, she's going to have to get to the merge.
Don't think it's been a disaster. I don't think it's been bad at all.
No,
really.
I don't think it's been bad. I just don't think that she's the type of person that's going to be able to win over someone from Braun or someone from Beauty.
Right.
I just don't see that as like, I think she needs a long run in to build alliances.
I think her problem is that when I hate to use the word in a negative way, I do think that she has a little bit of a know-it-all-ness about her.
And that's
not
what I mean.
Good way.
That's what I mean like by building alliances.
Like a Cliff Clavin type of like every little fact she has to tell you like, well, actually the way that this is that I would do this is I think that sort of grates on people. A deal breaker.
I agree. And that's why I think her social game, lacks. So like she's not going to be able to go into a merge where people already have pre-existing relationships and win people over. Whereas take someone like Caleb, Grandy's out now, but if Caleb were to make it to the merge, he's someone who I feel like could charm his way into another alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Or Jason. I feel like Jason can charm his way into another alliance.
Well, the Beauty Tribe to me though, that the way that they are sort of a fractured group, whereas you would think that for the most part, that those three women and Ty, and I guess Nick is probably the one free electron, which might be the person who would jump ship, but you would think that they're tight. The Brains Tribe, I would not describe them as tight. You have Neil and Aubrey who are a pair.
Right.
You have Joe and Debbie who are a pair, and Peter, Dr. Obama, that he's also sort of that other, you know, that fifth wheel in that group. And whatever the breakdown of that tribe is going to be, if you're going to split them into, say, 6 and 7 next week, whatever 2 or 3 of those people end up on the other tribe, they're going to be the one saying like, hey, vote out Peter. Peter is the one. They're going to be sort of like, if you go back to the original Brains versus Beauty versus Braun, the way that the Beauty Tribe was when they ended up merging into a group and coming out where you had the Brains, where it was Spencer and Cass and Tasha, they all ended up on the same group. So you could see potentially a scenario if that was to happen again like that, where Jason and Scott and Sydney, if they end up on a group with, say, then a couple people from Brains, all of a sudden Jason and Scott and Sydney are going to be the dominant force on that tribe, and they're going to be able to call the shots of whatever sort of like Neil and Aubrey saying, hey, vote out Peter, and Peter saying, hey, vote out Neil.
Right.
And
it's hard to imagine that they'd all end up on the same tribe.
Well, it happened the last time they did BBB.
That's true. Yeah, it could happen. It could happen again.
And the other thing about that is also that whatever two of them, okay, so you will have a scenario where two of them end up on a tribe. So say it's Jason and Sydney or
Sydney. They're in a great position.
I don't see that they're going to be sort of like throwing each other under the bus the way that whoever ends up with Peter from the Brains Tribe is going to be maybe throwing the other people under the bus.
What you're going to see essentially is you're going to see a Brains versus Beauty, and then the Braun is just going to have to choose a side. I think is what you're going to see on both sides.
And I don't even know if it's going to necessarily be versus beauty, because I feel like that the beauty Peter. is going to be tight. I think that they're going to go be the sort of the dominant force going into this swap.
Right.
And unless you broke them up into, like, I can't see the scenario where
they
beauty
turn on each other.
Is turning on each other, unless some where you get to a scenario where, say, it's like Ty and Nick, and they have sort of like no connective tissue between them, and they're trying to throw, Nick is saying throw Ty under the bus next week.
Right, exactly. So yeah, so
the most hated man in America.
Yeah, so that means that Jason's in the best position in this game. Would you agree?
Is he in the best position in the game?
Given what we have, given all the information, we know there's a swap. Who's in the best position?
Well, I think that Jason could be in a bad position, say, if he ends up in a group that has a beauty majority. So say he ends up in a group that's
five beauty.
Well, even four beauty are, stick together. Sometimes these tribe divisions end up being kind of wonky. Again, going back to the original Brains versus
Beauty. Is this going to be 7-7?
It'll be 6-7. One tribe will have six. So it's 13
people
left.
We had two go out today.
Right. So I think that you could end up with a scenario. So hypothetically, that Jason's on a tribe with, say he's on the 6-person tribe with three beauty and himself and, Peter and Aubrey. So that's sort of like a weird mixed bag.
Here's a question.
Yes.
Historically, I feel like when they have a odd number on a merge, they do something funky.
So you think that they could send, there's no Exile Island. There's no Bruce scenario to send. So
What happens? Do they just say, okay, there's 7-on-1 or 6, or does one person have to be eliminated immediately? I mean, how are we on episodes? Are we in terms of timing, it is an 18-person season. We do have to get rid of people. There's going to be a few two-boot episodes. Is this one of them?
I'm not sure that we'll find out as we get closer. Usually that there'll be a double boot, but I think it could either be some sort of like a schoolyard pick where then the one person doesn't get picked
and goes to the winning tribe.
Yeah. And then they end up going to the tribe that that would be some sort of Exile Island scenario. They might just let them pick where they want to go.
Right.
It'll be interesting to see how they do six and
I'm curious to see how they do that, because it's not normal where they do an odd numbers.
It isn't normal, but I think it's not unfathomable at 13 that you would have a tribe with six and a tribe with
seven.
Well,
remember, they didn't expect Caleb to go out.
Right.
So it was supposed to be a 7-7 situation.
Right. They sort of, ended up getting lucky in some way with Terry's departure in Cambodia that sort of made the numbers right for going back to a two tribe scenario in that season. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But it's going to be very compelling, I think, to see exactly how these tribes now get mixed up.
Yeah. So, all right, let's talk about just for a second. If Steven did this last night. So let's have you do it today.
Great.
If you could choose five.
Top five?
Top five. Who has a shot?
Five people that have a shot.
In no particular order.
Okay. And I guess I'm including things like the edit so far.
Yeah, of course. Everything.
Like, for instance, like somebody like Julia, who I feel like has been pretty invisible so far. I might say I have no reason to not pick her, but I just haven't seen anything from the show.
Okay, so we're going to do it like this. We're attorneys.
Okay.
We're going to pick a jury of five.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So we're going to do this by omission. We're pulling people out.
For the record also, I believe the last time we did this, we went through the entire season of the original Brains versus Brawn versus Beauty. We podcast about the first episode of the season. We did all the people that can win and cannot win. And we very clearly said, Tony cannot win Survivor.
Yeah, well, we knew what we were talking about.
I needed this.
Ooh. Yes. Okay.
Ooh. All right. So Nick's out.
Nick cannot win the game. I would say that the signs do not point to that.
Nick doesn't win.
Okay.
There's not. We don't know enough about Nick to have him win at this point.
Okay.
Michelle out.
Michelle is out too.
Yeah.
Again, I would say that I put her in the same boat as Julia about that.
Right.
We just have not seen enough yet.
Right. So I think we can throw those three out based on edgic.
Mm-hmm. Right? Wow.
Come on, I'm a suckster for 12 years.
Wow,
now.
Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, I don't post, but I know.
A lurker.
Yeah, I'm a lurker.
Yeah.
I think those three are out based just on they haven't got enough FaceTime. So that takes three out. So now we're down to 10.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to get this 10 down to five.
Okay.
Does Joe have a chance?
No, Joe has been so invisible.
Yeah.
Like, I really have been even surprised just how under the radar he has been. So, but you're saying that with the Beauty Tribe, you're going to put Anna and Ty through?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So Anna and Ty would make it through.
Anna is a possible winner. Ty is a possible winner. I say Joe is not.
Yeah, I say Joe's not. And I think Ty is very unlikely.
Ty is does
I put
seem,
an asterisk around him.
Does seem unlikely, but it would be.
But boy, would it be a satisfying victory.
The greatest of Survivor stories.
It really would be. It really would be. Okay,
really
all
would
right.
be.
So that's for beauty. All right. Braun.
Again, I might say that I don't think that I kind of feel like that the hype on this season of a tie win might be just like completely palpable of the tie hype coming into a season.
Well, are you trying to say there was a lot of hype coming in?
No, I'm saying that there was not a lot of hype. It was it was almost a hypeless season coming into this.
And so you're saying that means that Ty couldn't win because there wasn't enough hype around it.
If he won,
it would have to have been one of the greatest wins ever.
I think that we'd be like, oh my God, trust us this season, right. Season 32.
Right.
Wow. Like tell everybody, you know, watch this.
But do you think that maybe at some point Jeff has to say like, okay, this is a great season, but I'm not going to pump it up. I'm going to let it do its own thing because I always do that.
Well, you know, really coming into the original Brains versus Beauty versus Braun back in Kagyan, that was coming on the heels of your season on the Blood versus Water, and everybody, you know, everybody's so pumped up Blood versus Water. Jeff did not really hype up Kagyan, and it turned out to be easily a top five season with an amazing winner. That you would think that would be like, boy, this season, like, watch out. This is going
to
be
right. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. So let's go to Braun. Jason has a shot for sure.
Jason.
I mean, Scott has a shot. I don't think he's going to win.
I would not say that Scott has a shot to win. I can't see Scott as a winner.
I can't either.
But
it's hard for me to eliminate
for the
him.
Jason thing, I would say that I think feel like that's very unlikely. Also, I could see a final three. I think that for Jason, I think it would also be one of these things where, boy, the hype for a season where Jason ends up being the winner, like if he did ultimately fulfill the prophecy of Russell Hance and come out as the winner, I think that would be.
But to be fair, Jason, as much as he says that Russell Hance is his kind of the person he models the game after, he doesn't really play like Russell.
I'll allow it. You can come up with the scenario where he hasn't hit an immunity idol. He seems to be somebody who is like super keenly observant, following the action of what's going on. We do not condone his behavior towards Alicia, and we disavow anything that he has done in terms of bullying, because that is not how somebody should be conducting themselves in the game.
Agreed.
Yes.
100% agreed.
Yeah. And I'm open to discussing maybe that Survivor should be pulling people from the game at the first sight of bullying. I'm open to having that conversation at some point.
I don't think I'm open to that conversation. And here's why.
Trust me. Just go with me on this.
Okay. Let's have that conversation. Fine. Somewhere. But just don't have it with me. But you can have it with me. Just don't call me about it.
I'd be open to considering it. Okay.
Have the conversation.
Okay. You and I are having an adult conversation.
Survivor does police itself. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Bullies get taken care of in the game.
Yeah. So in terms of Sydney. I'm telling you, I'm starting to feel like that maybe there's a possibility that Sydney could be the winner. Could Sydney potentially be like a Denise Stapley?
She could win. Sydney could win. I could see Sydney winning.
She came out of this dysfunctional tribe. Could she be the person? There's always going to be bigger targets around her, like a Jason or a Scott.
So she's an under the radar kind of player.
An under the radar type of player.
But in order for her to win, she has to go to the final with Jason, which is conceivable, right? Because it has to be like, vote for this mean guy, or it's not even, she doesn't even have to say it. It's just more a vote for Sydney is a vote not for Jason, right?
She really did dance this fine line between the Alicia faction and Scott and Jason in this tribe. So I think that she has upside.
Sydney is the So Kim of this season.
Boy.
And I don't mean So Kim by So Kim's game. I mean So Kim's neutrality is what I'm referencing.
Neutral box.
Correct. Exactly. I feel like Sydney really stayed neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Like you didn't really see, I mean, she did establish a relationship with Alicia. You saw her having conversations with her. And at the same time, she never alienated the two guys.
Yeah. The one time she got worked up was that, she did seem like she was going to be lobbying for Darnell.
Correct.
She said
correct.
That.
Yeah. No, I do see Sydney with a potential winner edit, not edit, just gameplay.
Okay. In terms of the Brains tribe, this is where things start to get pretty interesting.
Right.
Okay. Peter.
I could see Peter winning.
He had a very bad week last week, but I thought he had a bounce back week this week.
Bounce back week. I mean, he's the guy that they inserted him into the challenge. The only thing that bothered me about Jason this week, and it really did bother me, it's evening time. He's essentially just been embarrassed on national television. I mean, he doesn't know it's on national television yet, but it is. And he says in his confessional, my tribe.
Is it Jason or Peter?
Oh, sorry. I'm talking about Peter.
Okay, because when you said the only thing that bothered me about
Peter. Okay. What bothered me about Peter is he's in his confessional on the beach after this blindside.
Yes.
And he says, my tribe just voted against strength and against strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, dude, are you still not seeing this? That there's other people with strategies?
Right.
That really bothered. I was like, come on, Peter. Like, I wanted him to like have this like really humbling moment and then like, okay, let's rebuild.
In terms of the edit, in that moment, also, the last thing we heard before we go to the challenge was that he was like, the only thing that could save me now is either a merge or a swap. And then we went to the challenge. Now, typically, the way that Survivor telegraphs that is usually like this, like, okay, everybody drop your buffs.
Right.
But we didn't get that here. But I felt like that point in the edit is saying that Peter is going to be saved by a merge or a swap.
But I guess so. Here's my official stance. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Peter doesn't win, and he doesn't win because he doesn't learn.
Mm.
He doesn't have the humility to learn from. He didn't learn humility from his first mistake, and so he's off my list. Okay. He's not in the top five.
All right, I'll allow it. Aubrey,
no.
Why?
I think she could get to a final three. I don't think she could convince a jury that she belongs there.
Okay, why?
I just don't think that she is active enough. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I do believe
from what we've heard and in talking with Liz that Aubrey's thing seems to be she does not want to talk strategy very much.
Correct.
She wants to talk about people and who she connects with emotionally.
Right.
And she's a big Survivor fan and likes to talk about Survivor, but not necessarily Survivor 32.
Here's why I think she can't win if she were to make a final three. I think she could slip into a final three as kind of just a under the radar person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, and I'm not saying this is right because this is, you know, I don't think a jury is going to look at her body of work and say that's deserving of winning Survivor.
Yeah.
Because juries tend not to like to vote for floaters. I'm not saying that being a floater isn't worthy of winning. I mean, if you get to the end, you get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very unlikely that a jury is going to say, oh, you flubbed to the end. Congratulations. Here's $1 million.
Yeah. I think it would seem unlikely to have her as one of the five most likeliest people to win the game.
Right. Exactly.
All right. What about Neil? Can Neil win?
Okay. Neil, who we've agreed is going to be called Councilman Jam from now on from Parks and Rec.
Councilman Jam. Okay.
And for those of you who haven't seen Parks and Rec, you should watch it. It's a fantastic show.
Yes.
But there is a character
played by John Glazer.
Yes. And he's a spitting image of Neil. Anyways, so that, you know, I feel like Neil has a shot to win based on intelligence alone, just like anyone in that mm-hmm. tribe. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like he really generates relationships that are required to get to the end for a strong male.
Mm-hmm.
It's like hard to imagine a scenario where he makes it to the end.
It's still early though. I mean, with some of these people, like you could see, I think there's enough there that he could emerge as somebody who is a mover and a shaker. He was pretty integral in the vote last week.
Right.
So I think that you could, it's not outside the realm of possibility. I think it's unlikely.
I feel like he's going to get into a confrontation with either Jason or Nick. I mean, he just seems like he's an alpha male. Mm-hmm. Two battering rams. I feel like
Neil, the alpha male.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could kind of see that play out with Peter a little bit in the last tribal, right?
Mm-hmm. Hey, they did have a bro high five after getting that puzzle completed.
That's true.
For Neil and Peter.
So, I mean, I
reconciliation perhaps.
So far, I like Neil.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's a unique character. We haven't seen too much of him. Mm-hmm. It's just hard for me to imagine he gets to the end.
Okay.
So he's not on my list.
All right. And then Debbie.
Debbie's the top of my list.
Top of your list.
And call it wishful thinking or just, you know, being a real fan. But Debbie's my queen.
Wow.
The bomb doors are open. Prepare to fire.
Wow. Your queen, Debbie.
Yeah. No, Debbie's the queen of my season.
Wow. And you just love her as a character. Or you love her game.
I love her as a character and I love her game. I think she's compelling as a character. She's interesting. This last episode, she kind of pulled at the heartstrings a little bit, referencing mm-hmm. being a mother.
Yeah.
And then you know, the near medevac and toughing it out. And I don't know. There's just, I don't necessarily know if I'd want to play this game of Survivor with Debbie, but I sure like watching her play. And I think she has some of the intangibles that makes a winner.
Wow. So you and Nicole are on the same page on the Debbie love.
Surprisingly, I didn't think I would have been such a big Debbie fan preseason, but at this point I'm a huge Debbie fan.
Yeah. Okay. I want to get into taking some questions from the listeners of the podcast. You know, we really hardly touched on Survivor Cambodia. We didn't have you on all season long.
Right.
What was your reaction? Just drilling down a little bit. You mentioned Vitas earlier, but for Vitas, just from your point of view, he went out there. Did you feel good about Vitas's chances going in, or did you have an ominous feeling about Vitas heading into that season?
So I felt good about Vitas's chances.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that I was feeling for Vitas, I was a little like, I knew Vitas got a really good edit his first season, and I was worried that he would feel the other side of that blade.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't want to see my brother get embarrassed or anything like that. And not that a first out's embarrassing. That's not. So here's how I found out he was first out. I got a text from somebody involved saying, you hear about your brother.
Wow.
And this is like, I'm at the Grand Canyon with my family and my heart sinks. And I have like quite literally a post-traumatic stress, like reaction to it. And
you
I
know, just so like physically something
like I was just like in the dumps and we were with other people and they're like, what's wrong for like days.
Yeah.
And I couldn't talk to Vitas, you know, and, Vitas ended up coming home early. He didn't stick around Ponderosa or take the trip. So he reached out to me a few days later and I was just like, I just wanted to hug him, you know, just like, hey man, I'm so sorry. I thought he had a good chance. He obviously got outplayed right at the start. It was a strong move by Shirin. I think much like we talked about villainizing the person you're going to vote it out, I think Vitas suffered in the edit from the fact that people were villainizing him because they were going to vote him out. And so he got the rough edit that way. But yeah, I think I felt like he had a shot. I really did. It's unfortunate because he, like most first outs will tell you, he didn't really get a shot to play. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he did, and he just got outplayed right away. He didn't get out of the blocks quick enough. And yeah, I mean, I was disappointed for him. I just like felt for him. Yeah, you know, I was like, oh man, I would have loved to see him have the chance to really get out there and play. But I think it was humbling for Vitas too, you know, and. All in all, he's got a great life outside of the game. So, you know, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but it was definitely hard for me to watch it happen to him.
Yeah. And for him, I just felt like that coming out of his blood versus water season, I just felt like that I was surprised more people, like I wasn't hearing his name a lot as a threat, but I just felt like coming out of it, like I would be super scared of if I was on a Survivor tribe with Vitas that I felt like Vitas is really good. Like I'd be very intimidated to play with Vitas because I feel like that he seems like just like a very strong player.
Right. Yeah. I thought he had a good shot. Like I said, like he's very manipulative.
Like I kind of feel like when, and again, I do not have an interest in, you know, going back, because I feel like that I would be very quickly, right, you know, Vitas'd out of the game. But I just feel like there are people like, oh, I wouldn't be intimidated to play against that person, but he would definitely be on the list of the people right. that
yeah.
I'd be
yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely
be very like, he seems like he's like, you know, I was very impressed with his first game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that Vitas will tell you too, if you asked him today, like, I think he benefited from some of the edit to create that, you know, like, wow, what a guy, he tricked those three women or whatever it was, you know, right before the merge. But
he's got a great highlight reel from Blood vs. Water.
And that's what I tried to tell Vitas right afterwards. And Vitas is fine now. You know, he's okay with how it all went down. But I tried to tell him, like, look, dude, people are going to remember you on that highlight reel. Yeah, things got a little bit salty on that last one, but people won't remember it. Don't worry. There'll be plenty of other things for people to remember about that season. So
he probably could have benefited from like another year or so of Survivor before going back.
Yeah. You know, I actually don't think that. I think what it came down to was that he was with Shirin, Abby Maria, two obvious first boots.
Mm-hmm.
Shirin is smart. She's smart in my opinion, at least as a Survivor player, in short spans. Mm-hmm. She was smart enough in that first little thing. Okay, I got to get the target on somebody else quickly. Let's push it on Vitas.
Vetus's strategy going in was don't make a splash. Let things settle first. You'll never be a first boot. Unfortunately, he needed to make a bigger splash. He needed to kind of rally the troops, and he didn't do that. He didn't get going quick enough, and Shirin got going real quick. But as you saw with Shirin, she kind of burned out really quickly, right after Vetus went out. And that's what happened. I feel like it was timing. It was just had the people out there. I don't know if you put Shirin and Vetus on that same beach, this didn't happen, but you do it a year later, I think it's probably the same result.
Mm-hmm. What about some of the other people that you play with? What about Sierra and her game? What did you think of how she ended up doing?
Yeah, I don't know. I felt like Sierra found herself in probably a similar position to the season that we played together, where she really wasn't in any control. And she tried to shake things up. My hope was with Sierra, and I love watching Sierra play, and I love Sierra as a person. My hope was that she would have seen the writing on the wall before I got to the point where she didn't have any control, you know, and she did try. She tried to get people to play. She just didn't try in the right ways. But I think overall our season, it was a little disappointing that Sierra Vetus didn't make it in, because I thought both of them had a good shot. I really thought going in that Sierra had a good shot to make. If she could get past the first couple episodes, she had a good shot to make it to the end. And I never thought Vetus would go home first.
And then Terry, obviously, he has to leave because of everything that was going on back home with his son, Danny. But what did you think about, at least for a couple episodes, Terry Dietz?
Yeah, I mean, he made a great play with Abby Maria pulling her in. I thought that was great. I think he's still the same old dog. Like, he didn't understand what was happening fully. But it was great to see him out there again, you know?
Who else do you know in real life? Abby?
I know Abby. To be perfectly honest, I haven't spoken to Abby since the season, and not as like retribution or anything like that. No, there's nothing, no bad blood. But I will say that I really did have this very tangible anger at her watching Vetus get voted out. Like, I wanted to protect my brother.
You blamed her?
No, I didn't blame her. It was just, it wasn't like a logical thought out thing that lasted more than 20 seconds. But watching the episode, I was like, fucking Abby. You know, that was like my feeling. And then it was, okay, I thought about, okay, I don't blame. Abby made the right move for herself. You know, I don't blame.
It was a self-preservation for her.
Look, no one got screwed that season. Vetus didn't get screwed. He just got outplayed.
Who else? Anybody else that you know in real life?
I know Spencer.
Okay.
It was fun to watch Spencer play. You know, I also know that Spencer and Vetus had a real relationship before the game. I mean, it was just like, hey, Spencer went and played. He didn't worry about his relationship.
But probably nobody knows better than you, you know, when the bell rings on these all-star seasons, that kind of, you know, throw a friendship out the window because it's not worth anything. And if anything, you open yourself up to being blindsided by somebody who you feel like, okay, well, I know I'm good with this person.
Exactly. And that was my advice to Vetus going in.
Yeah.
Don't have pregame alliances based on what happened, you know, with Jervis and I. And I don't think once you play, you can't blame someone. Once the game starts, the whole point is there's no holds barred. You can't get upset that someone, you know.
Yeah. But it's also hard to say also, like, if, you know, if I, you know, we're friends and we go and play, like, I'm still going to feel like, okay, well, I feel like I'm good with ours. We're friends. It's just only the kind of thing. And we may not have any sort of pregame alliance, but I'm still going
to
feel like.
Right. But here's the thing. So here's the thing to that. You have to check up on it.
Yeah.
You have to say, hey, Rob, how are we? And if, like, all of a sudden you're not looking me in the eye and you're telling me, like, I smell bad and you're, like, villainizing me, I have to pick up on that.
Stupid checkerboard ours.
Right. Exactly. Like it's just so in that capacity, I take responsibility for when Jerv voted me out. I should have picked up on it. Vetus should have picked up on Spencer. But you know, I think kind of in closing about Vetus's season, I think what it comes down to is returning seasons. There are no rules. Vetus shouldn't be a first boot, but he was, you know, like, people are certainly, as long as your name doesn't come up on the first, that first vote, you're not going to really stand up unless it's a direct threat to you and your family. And that's another thing that happened to Vetus. Like, people were like, hey, as long as it's not me, sure, I'll jump on that train.
Which Bushkaskis brother is more likely to play Survivor again?
Vetus. I will say this, and I've said it, I will never play Survivor again unless they promise me guaranteed money.
Okay. How much?
100K. Like, 100K, and I'll play again.
100K, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a lot of money.
Listen, I did it. I won it. I lost it. I've had the full experience. The only reason to go back away from my family, starve, lie, cheat, and feel like a piece of shit for another year would be if they gave me a lot of money.
All right. Well, speaking of game shows, this past week was the Survivor Price is Right.
Right.
Did you go out there for that?
I didn't go.
Okay.
I didn't go. I talked to some people who went.
Did you get asked to go?
I didn't get asked to go.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't either.
I did not get asked.
Did you get asked to go and be in the audience?
No.
I didn't get that.
Yeah. No.
I look at these pictures. I see 50 survivors in there. The people that it's like a Where's Waldo of Survivor.
Do you remember this second boot from season 13?
How did all these people
get the invite and you didn't?
End up either they got the invite or they just showed up.
No, I think they got the invite.
They got an invite.
You know, it's funny. Julie Berry sent me a text. Did you get the invite? I said, no. She goes, I didn't either. And I go, well, would you have gone? She goes, hell no. She goes, I'm still pissed I didn't get the invite.
Yeah.
Maybe they knew. Cause would you have gone? You wouldn't have gone.
I wouldn't. Honestly. Yeah. I
wasn't going to
look. I'm podcasting House of Cards at 13.
You got big fish.
I recorded like 6 podcasts on Monday.
I don't really want to talk about what happened at the Price is Right. I want to talk about what happened on Rob Has a Podcast. I don't know if you know this.
Oh yeah.
I'm a Family Feud fanatic. Fanatic. Like I have applied for my family to go on Family Feud. I sent Eric Ashay a text quite recently, like, what do we have to do to get my family on?
Wait, Eric Ashay could pull strings of getting you on Family Feud?
Maybe. I mean, I feel like it's a small world in casting, right?
Yes.
Dude, I would do anything. I would pay $100,000. I would go on Survivor if they promised me I could go on Family Feud. How about that?
Yeah. Well, we did have a lot of fun with the Survivor Family Feud Dirty 30 versus Wine and Cheese this past offseason.
And it was kind of the perfect two groups because you do have a really cohesive Dirty 30 and the Wine and Cheeses. Like, I don't see how I ever get invited to the Family Feud.
Well, I did
for podcast.
You know, originally, like, I was thinking of some sort of like East Coast versus West Coast Survivor Family Feud. I think that
which is kind of what you did. I mean, I feel like the Dirty 30 is basically a West Coast crew.
The Dirty 30 was just more consistent branding. Like, who would you have on the West Coast? Who would be on your West Coast team? So it's you, Vetus, Julie Berry. Who else is there?
I mean,
Nat 10.
Yeah, we could go Natalie Tenorelli. We could go Oscar. We could go
Oscar.
Yeah.
Who?
Ozzy.
Oh, okay. Oh, Ozzy.
Sorry, that's what. Apologies.
Okay. All right. Well, this is
Malcolm.
Malcolm. So I think this would be interesting. I would definitely do it again. I think that I think over the Skype was a little tricky. But if we could do it maybe in person and somehow record it and then
here's an idea. Think of the Survivor you would want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like for me personally, I would like to see first offs versus winners.
First offs versus winners.
So let's do a Family Feud of 6 winners or 5 winners versus 5 first offs. We could make that happen.
All right. So who's on which team?
Okay. On the first offs.
Yeah.
I'm going Brooke Garrity.
Okay. I'm definitely hold on. Let me get my music ready. Okay. All right. So give me the team of the first offs.
Brooke Garrity, Franny, Vetus. Who was the first off season 1?
Sonia?
You're
getting Sonia?
No, I was just checking.
Well, I feel like So Kim.
So Kim and Rupert. That's my
Rupert. Well, again, logistically, we're not flying people in.
No, we're not. This is going to have to, it's going to unfortunately have to be over Skype.
Okay.
But can we do that? Or do you need everyone in the same room?
I think that I would, the next time I do this, I would want to try to get everybody in the same room.
Okay. Brooke, Vetus, So Kim, Franny. Can we get Franny out? Does Franny come out to the West Side?
She's out here occasionally.
And maybe we'll have Daniel Liu as a guest first off, even though he was the second off, because we could get Daniel Liu for sure.
She's like the person when they have like the neighbor right. Also is like the exactly. Fifth person down exactly. On the end.
And then winners, we could go Parvati, Tyson, Aris.
But you're not that Parvati lives
Parvati
in
comes, she comes west. Okay, she comes west Monday times.
Tyson, you got to get him
Tyson
when he's
comes
here.
West. I think they're going to move here for a few months. That's what we're trying to get.
You're trying to get Tyson to move to here?
Yeah, no, just for a few months.
For a few months?
While they wait for their finish building their house. Yeah, that's the plan.
Wow.
Rachel is working on it.
Breaking news.
Yeah, Tyson's moving to LA to become a famous actor. Tyson, if you're listening, we're waiting for you, bud.
Wow. There's so many exclusives right now.
Okay. No, there's plenty of winners so you could get.
Okay. All right, well, that...
Just listen, if there's a way to get me on Family Feud, I don't care if it's on Rob Has a Podcast or if it's on ABC, Game Show Network, I don't care. Just get me on.
Yeah. Okay, so I would definitely do it. I would definitely do it again. If we could come up with some scenario where we have some thing that makes sense,
right,
to do it on the West, like with the West Coast people.
Here's the thing though. You can't have people on who don't know the show.
Yeah.
Because that was I liked listening, but I was like, I felt people were disrespecting the show.
Yeah. So we're disrespecting Rob as a podcast or disrespecting Family Feud.
The Feud.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Come on. It's The Feud. Okay. But you were a great host.
I tried.
You did a great job.
A lot of herding cats there.
Yeah, I feel like it'll get better the more you do it.
Cochran is another potential.
Cochran would be great.
I hear through the rumor mill, he's a big Family Feud fan.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So like maybe
we can get Cochran out here.
You know, maybe if we had somewhere. You know, it's the kind of thing where I wouldn't want to put a lot of money into it because I do fear legal prosecution.
Oh, right.
So it's the kind of thing where it's like.
Can we rename it?
What would you call it?
I don't know. Let's see. God, I actually came up with a name to like avoid any kind of trademark and now I'm forgetting it. What's a synonym for family?
Tribe.
Tribe.
The tribal. I think the feud is really the key word in that. So anyway, we can
tribal tryst.
The tribal tryst. I don't know. I'd workshop that.
Okay, let's do it.
Survey
hashtag
says,
something. What a dick.
No, I'm sorry.
What a dick. I just want to be on Fast Money. That's all. I feel like that's where I shine.
Yeah. Anyway, so I would love, let's figure out the logistics of trying to maybe over the summer, especially in that like period between Survivor and Big Brother.
When there's a gap. And here's, it doesn't have to be first off versus winners. I mean, I think what would be fun is get have listeners decide what would you want to see that's actually doable.
Yeah.
And let's make it happen.
If you can, especially if you could be recruiting people to come if we went to your house one night and basically just got a team, even if it was four versus four.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't have to be that many people.
Yeah. If it was just guys versus girls or something, something like that.
Or we could even do loved ones, you know, it could be Aris versus Aris on one side, Vetus on the other, Rob on one side, Nicole on the other.
Well,
Tyson,
I have to host it.
Well, maybe we could, maybe what's the guy's name that comes on the show a lot? And he was just on
who, Stephen Fishback.
Stephen could host, but there's somebody else who didn't play, who
Josh Wiggler.
Yes. Josh could host and you could play. I feel like for you, it'd be a nice little, vacation from hosting.
Yeah. It could be. We'll see.
Okay.
But look, if you could get the people to your house, I'll figure out the way to record it.
And here's a little more feedback on the questions asked.
Yes.
What the feud does really well is they ask questions that are going to garner inappropriate responses.
Well, especially now.
Right. Yeah. Now that Steve Harvey's hosting.
Yeah.
I feel like when Kirk Clark is doing the polling, he's got to ask questions that are going to garner some, questionable responses.
Okay. All right.
That's my feedback.
All right. You know, we were trying to keep things that were sort of Survivor adjacent on that.
Unnecessary.
Yes.
Unnecessary.
Okay. So you say, all right.
Let it fly.
All right. So, you know, you want the name something that, shouldn't go in your mouth.
Exactly.
Okay. all right. Okay. Right. Here we go. So let's take some questions from the listeners.
Let's do it.
Rob is a podcast. And let me start off with Christine. Christine wants to know, as a former basketball player, what is your assessment of Scott's comment to Alicia regarding cheerleading?
It is a terrible comment.
Yes.
It is a terrible comment, period.
Are you a Scott Pollard fan as a basketball player?
You know, I wasn't a Scott Pollard fan. I knew who he was. Obviously played at Kansas. I like him as a basketball player, a really hardworking guy. So far, just on Survivor, I don't like the Scott Pollard I've seen on Survivor.
Okay.
At least last episode particularly. I'm sure he's a great guy, but that was just really inappropriate.
Okay. Let's take a question from Thomas Tumillo. Wants to know, have you ever been bullied? If so, please describe the experience.
Jeez, Thomas, you really want me to open up?
Open up.
You know, Vetus and I had some moments.
That's what the story was back in Survivor Blood versus Water.
But you know when it changed.
Sumo at sea.
Right.
Picture it. You versus Vetus. And it was the story of the young kid versus the bully.
Right.
Even though you're bigger than your brother. But it was the battle and you
took a cheap shot.
Yeah. And he took a cheap shot and he said, okay, let's do timeout.
So what really happened is, they did best of three. Yeah. And the cheap shot got me in the water.
Oh.
And so then I had to beat him twice, but I was so pissed. I was like, and I needed that cheap shot to beat him. It was like, it's what got me angry.
You overtook the bully.
Yeah, I did. That was honestly the greatest moment for me in my Survivor experience. Of all the experiences.
Better than winning.
Better. It was just like redemption, period.
Against the bully.
Yep. It felt like a weight had been lifted.
It's poor Vetus. He has to be the bully that gets beaten, has to get first off.
Right. Now he's chosen an interesting path. But listen to this. Vetus is doing really well. He has a great life. So all said and done, nothing to complain about.
All right. Louise Johnson wants to know, that challenge came down to a race for salt and pepper. Do you think that if returnees had been playing instead of all new players, that they would have pulled a Penner sandwich style negotiation to end it? A loyal member of your tribe has to be worth more than salt. Is a loyal member of your tribe worth his salt?
I think if you were out there, Rob, it would definitely have been a Penner situation.
But do you remember back in Survivor Philippines when Penner and Scoopin had that negotiation?
No, I do. I remember that. I think potentially, yes. I think, you know, returners tend to pace themselves a little bit better, have a little bit more foresight, see the game in a big picture, not so myopically. So maybe, but it's hard to say. It's really hard to say. Look, on the surface, that challenge didn't look that hard, did it?
It did not seem like that was going to be a tough challenge.
No, it didn't. And I bet if you asked the Dream Teamers, they'd say the same thing.
Okay. So this is a question from Paul Schneider, who says, do you think that Terry deserves another shot due to his premature evacuation from Second Chances? And do you relate to him more now that you're a father?
Yes and yes. I would love to see Terry play again. And yes, I relate to him. I love Terry. Terry's a great guy. I'd love to see him play again. I think, listen, from a friendship with Terry's perspective, I'd love to see Terry play again. From a fan perspective, I don't think I need to see Terry play again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like I love Terry. I want to see him play again.
What's going to be different?
Exactly. I think is what you're saying, but I love Terry and I would love to see from as a friend, Terry, get him back on that show. He deserves it. He didn't get to finish it out. I think if he did play again, I'd want to see him change a number of things. I think he made some changes the second time, but I think the third time he'd have to make some big, big shifts.
Okay. Would you be willing to work with Terry? Would you coach Terry before he goes in for a third time?
I would. And you know what I'd do? I'd hire somebody else to coach him if I was his coach.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah, I'll coach you.
What would you tell the coach to work on with Terry?
Oh, gosh. Social cues.
Social cues.
And not that Terry is like inappropriate, but just like picking up on the nuances when somebody is starting to flip on him.
Hmm.
You know, I think that would be the thing. Because, you know, truth told, Terry didn't see that the rest of his tribe, had he not gone home, was getting ready to blindside him.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know? He missed the cue that Varner was getting ready to flip.
Right, exactly. So social cues, I would say. And that's just in relation to Survivor, okay? That has nothing
understood,
to do.
Understood.
It has nothing to do with it. In real life, Terry doesn't need those.
Trevor Chong wants to know, who are we more likely to see again, Caleb or Terry Dietz? You said that they both could play. If you had to pick one, who's more likely?
I think Caleb. I think Caleb got a memoriam.
Yeah,
it was that was unprecedented. That's what made that episode so unprecedented.
Okay, this is from Hamza wants to know, what's your favorite yoga pose? Should Rob totally go to yoga?
Rob should totally go to yoga.
Yes, that's
yoga.
Yes, you should totally come to yoga.
Here's what I think Rob should do. I think Rob should go to a yoga class and a Vetus yoga class.
Oh, yoga.
I think he should go to both.
Yeah, wow.
And all I could think about was Joe's body.
Yeah.
And my favorite yoga pose is Shavasana. That's lying Shavasana on your back.
Oh,
your
yes. Corpse pose.
That's right. That's called the dad pose, or the new parent pose.
Do you still do a lot of yoga?
Not as much as I'd like to. Honestly, it's pitiful the amount I get to do.
Yeah.
I still meditate every day, but my yoga asanas.
What do you start the day or do you
start
the day? Midday.
Yeah. Start the day, jump on the cushion.
Yeah.
Sometimes I have to wait until the nanny gets home because
right.
if I'm up with River, he's not going to let me meditate. So I have to wait until.
You know, I try every time I try to meditate, I fall asleep. And I don't know if I'm supposed to.
Well, are you sitting up or are you laying down?
I sit up. I sit in the chair. I fall asleep in the chair.
Quick little thing for everyone.
Yes.
5 minutes.
Five minutes.
And all you're doing is you're just observing your breath for 5 minutes. Just sitting.
Am I supposed to close my eyes?
Close your eyes.
Yeah. Once I close my eyes.
Okay. Close, but you need your back straight. You can't be against a wall. So you're not leaning up against anything. Your back is straight.
Oh, so standing.
No, you can be sitting. You could be cross-legged. You could be in a chair, but you just have to have your back not supported by a wall. Does that make sense?
No.
So if you sit down,
I sit in this chair right here. Right.
So have your butt further at the edge, so the back isn't touching the back.
Okay.
And just sit, like, you could just sit quite literally like that for 5 minutes. Close your eyes. Watch your breath. Every time your mind wanders, no punishment. Mm-hmm. You just come right back. Okay, my breath. And you're not trying to accomplish anything. That's what you have to remember.
Yeah.
There's no goal.
Okay.
Which is a little bit strange for us Western minds to take. Just no goal. Just observe.
And I fall asleep and I was told that they said, well, that just means you didn't get enough sleep. That's your body is trying to get sleep. I'm like, I know.
Hey, listen, if you can get 5 extra minutes of sleep, you should meditate every day and get to sleep. But if you do fall asleep, no worries. Just, you know, every day, 5 minutes.
Okay. And I said, maybe you meditate, maybe it's a nap. Maybe that's just what, like, a fancy word for, like, you're not saying, like, because if you told everybody, like, I'm going to go take a nap,
people would, like,
you lazy son of a.
No, that's what I was doing when I was getting voted out. I was just napping.
Taking a nap. All right. Edward Morris wants to know, would you cross over to either Big Brother or Amazing Race?
I would do neither.
You wouldn't. I feel like you'd be a good Amazing Race guy.
And here's why. Big Brother, 72 days, or I guess now it's 96 days, whatever it is. No thanks.
Right.
Amazing Race, you're always late for your flight. That's the feeling.
Yeah. You would win the Amazing Race. I could see you. You're like one half of a guy that when in the beginning of the season, when we preview the season, like, oh, okay, those guys are probably going to be.
Right. But I just don't want to feel like I'm late all the time. I'm already late all the time. I don't want to feel like it, you know, that's just like you're late. And you know, I'm friends with James and Tyler who won their season of Amazing Race, which I think was season 10.
Okay.
And that's how they described it. They're like, it just feels like you're late all the time.
Yeah. And, James, are those the hippies?
They were the models. They were right after the hippies, the season after.
Okay. Let me see.
It was BJ and Tyler that you're thinking
of. So right. You threw me off with a Tyler. The Tylers always win on the Amazing Race.
Now, they were the male models who were former heroin addicts.
Whoa.
Yeah. Friends with Vitas. Actually, so interesting story. Interesting. If nobody,
how interesting.
This is interesting. The way that I got on Survivor, James, who was on the Amazing Race,
some guys.
James was approached at Acapulco restaurant and asked by Erica Landon if he wanted to do Survivor.
Oh, wow.
James declined. Erica Landon said to him, well, do you know any other handsome gay guys? And he recommended me. Neither James and I are gay, but that's how it went down.
Wow. That's such a casting story.
Isn't it interesting? And then James went on to win the Amazing Race.
Yeah.
So, buddies winning things.
Wow. Okay. Let's see. Paul Schneider wants to know, did you take any satisfaction out of your brother about teasing your brother about being a first boot?
I think at a certain level I did, but no, not really. I mean, I felt for him mostly. I think like in 5 years when all the sting has gone away, I'm sure I'll tease him and definitely tell his children about it.
Okay. John Johnston wants to know, what was your reaction to Shane not making it to Second Chances?
I was shocked. Yeah. I was shocked. I think weren't you? I didn't think that was even a possibility.
It was pretty shocking.
I think everyone was pretty shocked.
Yeah.
I was shocked, disappointed.
Did you watch that podcast I did when Shane came over here the day after the vote?
I did. I listened to it. I was like, this is the only time I'm gonna talk about this.
That's it.
But I think
that's it.
You know, I think at the end of the day, I'm glad that happened. Because just slap him with
seems
a little
like
bit
Shane's
of humble pie.
Doing great. Too.
He's doing fine, and you know
he
what?
He doesn't need that segregation.
He doesn't need it, but also like he was being a dick in the polling running for his position. No, I don't need your votes. I'm getting on anyways. I got my whole podcast going for me. But I wanted to see Shane play. I think everybody did.
Yeah.
Not enough people did, obviously.
I'm telling you, he dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
Dodged
absolutely.
A bullet.
Absolutely. I guarantee if you ask Vitas, would you rather have been voted off first or not gotten voted on? I think 100 out of 100 times you say not got voted on.
Yeah. Brendan Fitzpatrick wants to know, how hard was it to not talk about last season and stay off of the radar for social media? And did you miss us?
I did miss you guys. It was a bummer not to be on the show. I mean, I really wasn't that spoiled. You know, I knew that Vitas.
I forgot how good you are on the podcast.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
Yes.
Part of me, like, I got spoiled. So I knew that Vitas went home and then I knew Shireen went home. And then I knew the final three. And part of me wanted to lie to Rob and be like, Rob, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I did know, and I felt like that wouldn't be fair. And I'd, of
a
course,
lot of people, I felt like we're doing the thing like, oh, you know what? I don't know any spoilers.
Yeah, no, I did.
Seriously,
and that's
I don't
why I didn't
know.
Go on. And I know that if I went on, I'd want to like amaze everyone by my like predictive abilities. Like, no, I definitely feel like Jeremy's playing a great game right now. I know it hasn't started yet, mm-hmm. but yeah, it was hard to be away.
Yeah.
And honestly, like I only have Twitter for the podcast. Like I'm going to go home and check my Twitter 14 times in the next 2 days to see what people say.
Yes.
Because it's like the only feedback I get in life that's somewhat positive now that I'm married with a child as we spoke. It's like the one place I can get validation. So if any of you jerks talk nasty about me on Twitter, it's going to ruin my week. Say nice things.
Yeah. So it bums you out when people write negative things on Twitter?
Yeah, it does. I mean, people don't really write negative things about me on Twitter. I'm not that. There's no reason to write anything about me on Twitter. But yeah, of course, I always get bummed. Like, damn it.
Yeah.
It doesn't bum me out to the point where I like have a bad day. I just believe them more than when people say nice things.
Yeah, no, I do too. But it bums me out.
Like, yeah, you're right. I am a narcissistic prick that sounds a little bit like a girl.
Yeah. I do. I wake up like first thing in the morning and I'll sort of like look at my Twitter because my thinking on, you know, the world is like, I'm sort of like, okay, I need a debriefing. What's been happening within the 5 hours I was sleeping?
Right.
And I figure that if there's anything that's sort of like the website's been hacked, anything like that, that people will tell me immediately on Twitter. And then invariably, like it's really like,
and you get a lot of feedback. I mean, you get a ton, like just for me being on the show, like quite literally, Rob, I don't check my Twitter.
Right.
Almost ever. But when I'm on the show, I do because so many people like will respond and say things, but you get a ton.
Well, I'll have like a lot of that. I'd say probably on an average day, depending on what just because I'll put like my day is typically like I will like almost like the last thing I'll do is either I'll post a podcast or Scott St. Pierre will post a podcast. So like a podcast typically will go up like right when I go to bed and then I wake up. And then I get like whatever, and then like, you know, sometimes it's like a really like off-putting start to the morning.
Right. Shit.
Like you idiot.
What was the feedback? Did you get any, how was it this season on the Corinne episode?
You know, I think I did such a good job of, I basically scared anybody off from complaining.
Right.
Like I basically made it that like, if you complain about this podcast,
it's on you.
It's on you.
Yeah.
I told you not to listen to it. So
did you get any?
I really did not. That was
amazing.
It was amazing.
Yeah,
first time.
I do. I have to say, I look forward to the Corinne podcast.
Everybody does.
It's great. It's so good. It's funny. It's like awake. I actually didn't even look at the cast until then. So it was like, your guys are podcasting. I go on my phone to like see who she's talking
about.
Job. Yeah, it's good.
Very good.
It's really good.
And I also like felt like if you have a problem like
that, I love
like,
that you did a kid's version too.
Yeah, we had that,
but which also, was a little bit like rubbing it in the face of the people that didn't want.
Like,
listen.
Hey, if you want to listen to that, we gave you something else.
Exactly,
gave you alternatives. Try. No, I really go to great lengths to try to minimize the negative feedback. I try. Did I mention also how much we disavow the comments? From Jason and Scott.
The behavior of Jason and Scott, deplorable. We disavow it. There's no at all rationalizing it or justifying it. You can understand how it happened. That doesn't make it right.
Right. And again, that's my biggest takeaway from this podcast is that I just want to like we are talking about these things, but we're trying to talk about them without just going into one note. Righteous indignation
right.
about it. We're trying to have an adult conversation about it.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely.
And an adult conversation in the context of how will this impact what happens next on this game show?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what people have to understand too, is like when you're understanding pretty much anything that happens on Survivor, there's complexities that don't happen in real life. And that's why Survivor is a great show, because of all those complexities. And so to understand it, you know, like Steven said last night, Survivor brings out the worst in people. And that's because there are these extenuating circumstances, and it's important for people to understand that. Doesn't justify anything, but it lets you understand how that happens. Because I promise you this, and this is something that people ask me all the time, like, how long does it take to adjust to the cameras? Rob, how long did it take you to adjust to the cameras?
A day.
By 4 or 5 days, you know there's a camera there. You're a rational, smart man. But if you're having to flip out, the cameras don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's crazy about Survivor. Like, you know they're there. But you just don't care. You're so hungry. You're so tired. You're so thirsty. You're at your wit's end. It just doesn't matter. And that's how really
some survivors are thirstier than others too.
Ooh, that's true.
Some survivors get real thirsty.
Are you referencing somebody in particular, Rob?
No. Okay. Nick Fishman wants to know, if you were Alicia back at camp after the immunity challenge, what fun things would you have done if you knew it was going to be you voted out? I sometimes have that sort of fantasy,
right,
of like in Survivor All-Stars, I was blindsided. I didn't know I was going to be voted out. But sometimes I think about like two things. Like one, I wish I would have known that I was going to get voted out because one, I could have tried to save myself.
Right.
And two, like, I think I would have like really like, you know, come into that tribal council, like guns blazing. I never really think about like, oh, I would have like loved to go Brandon Hance on that camp.
Right.
That's not really me, but I do feel like going to that tribal council, I would have liked to say like, and hold on, don't even get me started on this guy. Like, you know, and Sue, yeah, Hawk.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I feel like, you know, initially, like, just my gut response is like, yeah, I would burn down the camp, you know, if I knew there was nothing I could do. Of course, like, I also know there's cameras there and I wouldn't burn down the camp just because I wouldn't want people to think I was crazy. But that would be like my first reaction, be like, yeah, burn it down. I just think like, at least when I played Survivor, like, the only thing you're there for is to win. So you're going to do everything you can to change, you know, your plot. So if I was Alicia, if I couldn't convince anybody, I'd just be searching for an idol.
Yeah.
You know,
I get the sense that's what she did.
Yeah, I get so too. I think, unfortunately, I think that last night's episode should have been an hour and a half because it would have been, or at least an hour and 15. It would have been nice to see what happened, at least a little bit, because Alicia did have a quality that made you want to see what happened.
The shorthand is that if anything good happened, they would have shown it.
But would they have? Did they have space? Like, what would you have cut out? It was a great, that was an action packed.
I think you would have cut out maybe Debbie talking about her family.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
You know,
but maybe Debbie wins and you can't cut that out because that's part of the hero build.
Show it at the start of next week's episode. Okay. Let's see anything else. We talked about so many different things.
Is there a way to questions. Like turn, like, you know, Justin Bieber's Beliebers? Is there anything we can do with Debbie about that?
Yeah. That's what we've been trying to come up with.
What's Debbie's last name?
Wanner.
She's obviously a Wanner. She's got a Wanner's edit.
Yeah. A Wanner edit. That's good. Thank you for the hashtag.
Hashtag winner edit.
So, going back to that story, that famous story that you almost got medevaced out of the game on day 39, what would have your medevac edit have looked like? Would it have been as dramatic as last night's episode?
No, I feel mine would have been like the bumbling idiot episode. Like, there would have been like clown music as I was evacuated. I was thinking about this driving over here, Rob. I was like, no matter what, you put me on Survivor 100 times, I never get a hero edit because that's just not me. I'm not like the hero guy. Like, I can be a good leader. I'm a nice guy. But like, when it comes down to it, I never get the Caleb edit. And that's not me being a victim or blaming anything. I just don't have that quality. Like, do you ever get a hero edit if you play?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I just don't see myself getting one.
In no scenario.
I see myself like at best getting like the friendly neighbor edit.
Like, friendly neighbor edit. Who had the friendly neighbor edit?
I don't know. What's his name? The big guy. You guys were talking about him. He was a merge boot a few seasons back. Balding, tall.
Balding, tall, friendly.
LD. No, no, no.
LJ?
LJ. LJ got a neighbor edit, didn't he?
Friendly neighbor edit.
Like, who on Survivor would you most want as your next door neighbor?
He would be a good neighbor.
Outside of Bob Crowley, because obviously that's the first pick.
Yeah. The neighbor draft, and we're not going with like anybody in terms of like we're not doing anything like anything like attractive. Like
a, right, yeah, no, right. No, no, we're not doing that because
neighbor.
Because like here's just to bring this up for a second. At my wedding, have we talked since I got married?
I'm sure we have. Well, when was your
April 29th?
I think you were here for a podcast in May.
Okay, so yeah, someone has just got married. So yeah. So I had the unfortunate opportunity at my wedding in Mexico where we hired nannies for both my child and Vitas' child, and the nannies were hot.
Oh no.
And it actually wasn't like you'd think, like, oh great, like the hot bit, it sucked. First of all, I'm getting married, so like I don't want to look. Second of all, like what good happens of having a hot nanny? What good happens of having a hot neighbor when you're married? Nothing.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not good.
So was it like, did Chrissy get mad?
No. She was like, yeah, they're beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, they are beautiful, but I don't really want beautiful nannies. You know, I know that's probably very
between you and me, I think she's a lot cooler than Nicole. I think that's really cool. I think that, you know, I think, you know, she's modeling. She works with models. Like, Nicole,
well, there was like this really good looking,
like much less cool about this.
The problem was there was this really good looking male, like kite surfing instructor. at there kite as well that Chris was just like gaga over.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, all right, fair enough. I have the hot nannies. You have the hot kite surfing instructor.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get married.
Austin Rhodes wants to know, dear Aris, what do you like better, barbecue sauce or honey mustard?
Ooh, good question. But it depends on what
I'm
eating.
Why is this a question?
Honey mustard's delicious.
Have you ever talked about barbecue sauce or honey mustard?
No, but it's a great question. It's ranch. My answer is ranch, but I guess if I had to choose a second, I'd go honey mustard.
Jen Manning wants to know, since when does Aris look like Ryan Gosling?
Ooh, I don't know, but are we saying that for real?
I don't know. And she said, I also agree with Johnny Fairplay, who posted how much.
How much what?
It's a long story.
What about what?
How much money would he have to pay to get with you?
Johnny?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
It's a bad inside joke.
How's Johnny doing?
Okay.
Where is he living?
Yeah, he was on the podcast last week. You could go back and listen.
Is he in LA?
Or
he's in Virginia.
He's back home. Yeah.
Is it Virginia? Is that where?
Virginia, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Johnny has the best line, misogynistic, albeit, but the best line in the history of Survivor.
Which?
Rockin' body. When he's doing like the remember the past Survivor moment.
For who, Dara?
Yeah.
I sat next to Dara at the finale.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay, and then let's see, any last questions? Should Alicia have just lost it and poured out the team's rice? Chris Hickey wants to know.
No, it's not a good look. It's not a good look. I think Alicia actually embedded herself in our hearts as an audience.
You know?
Like you can say she was annoying, but like I was cheering for her. Rob was cheering for her. Nicole wasn't.
Yeah.
Important to note, Nicole was not cheering for Alicia.
Okay. I am not reading the question, who is in the biggest need of the Wambulance? Because people have said to me on Twitter, stop asking the recurring questions to the guests.
Right, right. So do something different. Don't ask that.
I am not asking that question. And then finally, Mark Harrison wants to know, can the veterans quit bitching about how easy the newbies have it?
Who's bitching about how easy they have
it? I think there's a lot of people on Twitter like, oh, what? They're getting rice.
But people say that every time. You know, everybody wants to pretend like their season was the hardest. Look, hey, newsflash, the hardest season in the history of Survivor was Guatemala. And there's like two people from that season that we even talk to anymore socially.
It's
like the royal we.
You're
the
like
Survivor.
The mean girls.
No, I don't mean that in a way of
we
like,
don't even talk to anybody from Guatemala anymore.
Let me explain. I don't mean like we as in like me. I just mean like who are still active in the Survivor community. Like, listen, Guatemala has some of the best contestants. Yeah. Like Rafe Judkins is one of my favorites.
Yeah. In fairness, we have only had one guest from Guatemala on the podcast in the history of the show. So,
really?
Yes.
Who was it, Danny?
Brian Corden.
Why not Danny? Get Danny on the show.
Yes, she has never really, like, I have reached out and it has not taken.
Reach out again. I have a feeling she'll do it.
Okay.
Reach out again. I think she'll do it.
All right, we'll see. All right.
Because especially after Jeff Probst saying they're going to do a winner's season.
A Wanner season?
A Wanner season. Debbie will highlight that.
All right. Aris, great job here on the podcast.
Thanks, Rob.
You really killed it. This has been such a strong show.
Great.
Very happy with how this has come out.
Great. And we have a hashtag for the listeners.
Wanner edit.
Wanner edit. How do we spell Wanner?
W-A-N-N-E-R.
All right. Hashtag Wanner edit.
Wanner edit. So this was very, very fun. You were going to be checking your Twitter for the first time ever?
For 2 days. I will be checking for 2 days.
For 2 days, for the next 48 hours.
And well, I promise to respond to you if you say something that is coherent and requires a response.
Okay. Well, we probably won't get this up until Thursday evening. So wait until then.
And my Twitter's at Audus Music.
At Audus Music.
ODDUS.
That you tweeted last week, great episode of Survivor's Night. Bummed to see Liz go, but always happy to see a blind side. So you, and then before that, you had not tweeted since October 21st, 2015.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I tweeted last week to prepare for this week. I knew you contacted me. I said, all right, well, I got to get this Twitter thing going. Yeah. Remember my password. Get in here.
Yeah.
Just make sure this thing works. I liked Liz. I did like Liz.
Wow.
Did you, by the way, before you guys go, if you have a chance, Liz posted photos of her staph infection on the internet.
Yeah, it's pretty gross.
It is pretty gross. Check it out.
That was pretty gross.
But like pretty scientific too. You know, it wasn't like, it was gory, but not gory. It was like these holes missing in her shoulder and her knee.
Where'd you see those? On the Survivor Reddit?
No, I'm Facebook friends with her.
Oh, look at you.
But I'm guessing they're on the Survivor Reddit at this point.
Yeah. So do you send her a friend request or does she send you a friend request?
Well, we met, remember, in New York with Steven.
Oh.
We had, the three of us had lunch. Steven, myself, and Liz.
This wasn't a date, was it?
This is, no. This was, right before Steven's season aired.
Okay.
And so we all got to meet and hang out. And then we just, I don't know who added each other. But yeah, I typically don't add people unless I know them.
Yeah.
I changed my Facebook thing. I had a weird stalker situation. So I.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah. I backed away.
Wow. You got to stalker level?
Yeah. All it takes is one. You know?
Wow.
I have not had many stalkers. I have one.
Look at you. Ryan Gosling, stalker level.
God, that makes me feel good. Finally, look my son in the eye again.
All right. Let's start to land this plane because we'll just stand here for another 3 hours otherwise. But really, so happy that you came by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to
always,
be back.
Always fun. Best of luck with Shop Dawn.
Christy Dawn.
It used to be called Shop Dawn.
It used to be changed the name. Trademark infringement issue.
Okay. And if people want to check out what you're doing online with that, where do they go?
They go to christydawn.com, christydawn.com. I mean, you're not going to find anything out about me. It's my wife's. It's all about my wife. I'm just right. I'm just her slave.
Yes.
But everything's made really ethically friendly, eco-friendly, socially friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all made in LA. It's really fun.
All right. And we are going to be back with Jessica Lease talking about the Survivor voicemail in our next podcast. Very much looking forward to that. And we're going to work on a live Family Feud.
Yeah. Live Family Feud.
Okay. That's on you. You're going to try to come up with a guest list.
Here's the thing. If one of your listeners comes up with a good idea and you tell me, okay, like this is the idea, I'll help put it together.
I mean, I don't think we need one of the listeners and they have lots of good ideas, but I feel like the idea is you get enough people to come to your house.
Okay.
I'll come in with a microphone
and we'll do it in person.
Yeah. In person.
Okay.
In person. And then nobody is going to be like too hammered.
Right. No. You get one beverage before the game, beverage during, and that's it.
That's it. That's good.
But do you feel like, here's the other thing though. I feel like in true tradition of the feud, Dirty 30 has to be there. They have to defend. That's just the way it works.
Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll figure out all the logistics.
Okay. Cause I think what I ideally like is a first off versus winners, but I think what's fair is Dirty 30 versus the next group. I'll bring the next group. We can get the Dirty 30 together. They all live together in one house in Venice. So we can get them together.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about the logistics. All right. Thanks so much, everybody, for checking this out. Also, thanks so much to all of the new patrons, which have come on in the last week. I really do appreciate all the support. Seems like lots of people are coming on board. So thanks to all of the new patrons. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, go to robiswebsite.com/patron. We'll be back with Jessica Lease on our next show. Make sure you don't miss it. Subscribe to the podcast. Go to robiswebsite.com/iTunes or search for RHAP in your favorite podcatcher. Ours, thanks again. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.